the one place where news, opinions, and entertainment are the way you like it. This is Rant EM Radio.
Want to chat with the guys?
Friend Blink.
That's not how I wanted to announce that either.
This is Brooke's poem about what's going on.
Oh my god, he's about to fucking read it.
Is the poem called Manjaw?
Jesus Christ. My father has a daughter and I have feelings too, and if I knew your father, I would do the same for you.
Motherfucker, fucker.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am no longer straight edge after having to sit here and listen to that.
There was this one comment that I saw where this one dude said, not even remotely good. So I click on his Facebook and all of his photos are him with his two young sons at TNA events. Ah. You know, if they make a wish kiss, I bet they wish they were a Raw. Oh.
Friend Blink.
Brother. There. Perfect. That was it. That was the Hogan audio right there, man.
Don't trust Rick Dunne.
Something gay must have happened to you and you didn't like it, so now you're mad against the world. Like, get over it.
When you said something gay must have happened in the past and they didn't like it, I thought you meant like buying Batman Arkham Knight for PC.
No, it's just like
what, why are you so pissed off? Something gay happened to me. I bought the PC version of Batman Arkham Knight.
Friend Blink.
And the looks on their faces, it almost seems like TNA doesn't have fans. They have victims. And there's people who defend it to me, man. There's listeners that we have that defend it to me. They'll privately message me and they'll literally justify everything. It's the craziest thing I've ever seen. They'll explain every single illogical
justify
thing.
Justify that lollipop.
You see, you could talk about old wrestling without saturating your show. With it and it still works.
Pull those jabs tonight, man. I should introduce you as Ronda Rousey next time.
Goodness. Rowdy Ronda Rousey.
Thank you, gay Jesus.
Hey. Casting aside their regular work to try this other thing. You see, that's how you become a comedian. You know, that's some initiative.
What about me? And then the crowd goes, what about Beretta?
You can't have that. Can't just give that to Trent Beretta. No way.
Yeah. What the hell was that? I don't even know what that was.
That was...
So it begins.
Yes, it does.
A week of mediocrity.
Every week can't be gold, man.
Yeah, it was what it was.
It is.
We're going to be limping through this one, I'll tell you that much. We're going to be worse than Zeb in his little go-kart.
Aw, leave Zeb alone.
Hey. I didn't put him there.
Hey, the episode won't be as awkward as the promo was tonight.
What wasn't awkward tonight, right?
Yeah, Jesus. Like, it was a real letdown. It makes you appreciate Seth Rollins so much more if you weren't appreciating him before.
I'm so angry that there's so many people now mourning him. I had to hear so much bull, so much about Rollins and how he's not that good and they don't like the role he's in and how... people are acting like it's the apocalypse and we need Rick in WWE now that he's gone. Hypocrites, yeah, all of them.
It's funny, like same thing here. I heard a lot of people go, oh, I don't like Rollins because of his voice. His voice isn't believable enough for him to be a heel.
Yeah,
and it's the same people that turn around and it was like, well, Raw kind of sucked tonight. Like they really missed that Rollins factor.
Yeah, well, first things first, because you know what they want out of the pre-show.
Mm-hmm.
The 1% of people who want that out of the pre-show. But as per tradition, we're going to talk about some Walking Dead.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to actually start with my opinion of the episode. I thought it was slow. This is one I didn't like.
Yeah, I mean, I'll agree with you to a point, and it kind of pisses me off because I know what they're doing. They're purposely holding off the Glenn stuff, and I feel like you're not going to find out the fate of Glenn until the final episode of the season.
I knew they weren't going to give us the Glenn stuff. That wasn't even my problem. It's just that everything else, the pacing.
The story just felt dragged out this week.
Yeah, it really did. Yeah. So we might just speed run through this one a little bit, but we'll take it scene for scene. It opens with Deanna climbing a ladder and overlooking part of the town. She winds up touching Reggie's signature. I think it was on the first building that he's ever made when they came there or something. And she's watching the bodies being cleaned off of the street, and she overhears Michonne telling Maggie the news about Glenn, and she hears screaming off in the distance and sees that the super herd is coming and chasing Rick back, and he gets through the gates and locks them out. And basically at this point, the people of Alexandria are shitting bricks and they need a Rick pep talk, which he's there to give them. And
he tells 12 of them that are left.
Yeah. And he's telling them that the wall's going to hold together, but can they? And he tells them at night to be very quiet and to basically live with no electricity in the dark, because as if it's not terrifying enough that you now have fucking undead people banging on your walls, he wants all the lights up so that you could just sit in the darkness and contemplate that shit safely. That's going to do great for them psychologically.
Yeah.
So he tells them to be quiet and live in the dark. And he says, make the place as quiet as a graveyard. And then one of the replacements says that the place is a graveyard.
I like how you dubbed her the replacement.
You have to. We have to be realistic about what this
is. Honestly, at this point, we've read the books. We know what her fate is going to be.
Yeah, I guess. Aaron winds up crediting Rick for getting half of the super herd away. And then he admits that losing his pack is what caused the wolves to find their way back here. And Deanna walks away broken, and no one's able to get her attention because we're slowly seeing her fall apart.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is a really rough time for the poor woman, I guess. I always liked her, but, you know, now she's starting to see what a zombie apocalypse looks like.
Right, and it kind of bugged me. It was like, I get that she's mourning the loss of the community, the people that she knows and she loved. I can't even say love, just familiar faces. They're now gone. But to me, it felt like she was mourning their losses more than Douglas. Like their losses hit her harder than Douglas being gone.
She didn't really have much time between Douglas Monroe's death and, I mean, Reggie's death. You were saying Douglas over here.
Right.
You were confused with the comic book counterpart.
The book. Yeah. My fault. But yeah, it just seemed like, yeah, granted, you said they didn't have enough time for her to actually mourn it. Maybe that's what it was. It was the loss of him and then everything. Yeah. And just the realization that it's all happening so quick. Like now that they have that moment to calm down, that it's all just like weighed in on her shoulder.
Yeah, it could definitely be that. It's a whole bunch of things.
Yeah.
So Jesse's dragging the wolf girl's body out of her house into the stockpile. She begins to dig a hole and she comes across Rick, who tells her that they don't bury killers within the walls. And then Jesse asks, what do they do? And Rick just says that they wait. It's about waiting now. And this moves us along to a scene of Olivia trying to ration food. She's trying to encourage the people to not eat everything, because that's what people do when they're depressed. You know, they go for the fucking Ben and Jerry's in the middle of Alexandria. Yeah. And then she basically fails. So they start to take the food. And then Spencer comes in and he tells them all that it's wrong. And he gives his own pep talk, and he owns up to the fact that he left the gate open, but then he also takes credit for being the one who stopped the truck before it burst through those gates, and then explains how if they give up here, that this is going to be it, and they all put the food back. And
I found that a bit unbelievable, but to each their own.
Yeah, well, remember, they're very civilized. They're civilized to a flaw.
Yeah, but it was like this fuckboy of all people was able to pep talk you guys into putting the stuff back.
I mean, they're Alexandria people. I'm pretty sure if he would have pulled out a bunch of straws and had each of them draw it for the largest can, they would have civilly done that too. He could have done it over a game of Uno. You know, these people are like super civilized. So then we get Aaron, who sees all of the people writing a memorial on the wall for their departed friends and loved ones. And he comes across Maggie, who's clearly going after Glenn at this point. You can see her armoring up and stuff. And Aaron, at first, it seems like he's trying to talk her out of it. But then it turns out that he just wants to go with her.
Yeah, because he's at that point where he's like, I have nothing to lose either at this point. So if you're going out, like, I'll go out with you.
Yeah, and then we go back to Fall Indiana, who she starts mapping where the crops are going to go, the security, the power. She starts writing blueprints and stuff, keeping herself busy. And she hears shattering in the other room, and it turns out to be Spencer's drunk ass dropping a glass on the ground in the kitchen because he's been getting drunk on the booze that he stole. And Deanna asks him if what he told everyone is bullshit since he's over here stealing booze. And, you know,
Bob's still with us in spirit.
Yeah. And then he says that we're all going to be dead real soon, so it doesn't matter. And winds up blaming her for them being stuck in this shitty situation and the death of everyone and everything's wrong. And, you know, just
it was a cool scene, but it was an asshole scene at the same time. I thought it was a cool scene because he didn't do the typical thing that you would expect where he'd go, sorry, Ma, I didn't mean that. And then they hugged it out or whatever. He was just like, fuck it. It is what it is. I said what I said. And he just turned and walked away. But it's messed up at the same point because it's little jabs like that that's going to further push her to like the end of her limit.
Whatever her limit may be, because we seem to be getting pretty damn close to that limit.
Yeah. Yeah. Which we'll discuss by the end of the episode.
Mm-hmm. So Carl and Ron have a stupid teenager scene because you know how much I love these where Carl wants Ron's help to go find Enid, but then Ron's too busy claiming Enid. That's my girlfriend. Get your hands off my woman. And Carl winds up pushing Ron onto his ass. They get into like a little bit of a cat fight.
A slap fight.
Yeah.
It was funny because I was like, dude, you're messing with him. He's been out there. Like, he knows how to defend himself. And at the same point, at the same time, I was like, wait a minute. He's never actually been in a fist fight. And I was just like, this is going to be interesting to see how it goes down. And boy, was I wrong, because it wasn't interesting at all. Like you said, it was legit. It was a slap fight and yeah, well, Carl gets shot on his ass.
Carl wasn't trying to kick his ass. But in all realisticness, Ron should have tried to just duel him in Yu-Gi-Oh or something, you know, as opposed to, you know, break up the hazard. Yeah, exactly. Get that same camera shot of him. Because the closest he's ever been to a fight is car trading and shit. But anyway,
same thing with Carl, with the exception of just like actually being out there and shooting walkers and stabbing them. He doesn't have any actual like hand-to-hand combat, as far as I know.
I mean, I would definitely qualify walkers as being experienced. There's no better experience in this world than the kind Carl's had. Survival experience.
Yeah, but I mean, that's survival. That's like, yeah, he knows how to stab a walker in the head. He's not going to stab the kid in the face.
No, not yet, at least.
Not yet.
So then Ron basically says that he'll tell his dad and the other people who go out and find him and so on and so forth. And in a sense, he'll be saving his life in exchange for the fact that Carl at one point saved Ron's life. More teenager
logic. I like how he laid on the floor like Carl did punch him in the face. Like, he socked him real good. Like, he laid there for that whole speech.
Yeah, he laid there like in the You Are Dead Resident Evil position. What the hell was that all about, right? And it was just like, this is awesome.
I don't know. I know if I got dropped, like, we're having a fight and I get dropped, I'm not going to just lay there on the floor. I'm going to get back up. Even if I'm like, all right, you dropped me, fight's over. I'm not going to sit there on the floor. I'm not even sit there because he laid there like he was legit knocked out and he was just talking out of his ass at that point.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that scene is over.
Yeah.
Next, so Olivia. Yeah. Next was Olivia in the hospital with Tara, and Scott hasn't woken up yet from the gunshot wound to the leg. Which, if you guys recall, a few episodes ago, Sturgis shot him in the leg, panicked, and got himself eaten, and Scott suffering as a result of it. So Tara calls Olivia brave for being in there and trying to take care of Scott, and says that she's basically checking in on her, credits her for all of her help. Olivia says that she's scared that Scott's going to die. So we wind up in the scene with Jesse, who's wandering near a house, and inside she sees a walker. And this walker is Betsy, the neighbor. And just a little throwback, Betsy is the wife of David, the guy who got bitten in Michonne's party a few episodes previously. And apparently her story is she took her life after the loss of her husband, whose note was never delivered. Isn't it funny how that shit came full circle?
Yeah, that kind of bugged me because I was watching it with my wife and my question was, how the hell did she turn?
She killed herself. She committed suicide in her house somehow. So anyway, Jesse takes her out with basically a stab through the eye, and then the other people are staring.
She seemed to enjoy that very much.
Yeah. And then she gives them a speech about how she used to not want to see the way things are, but this is the way life looks now, and that they have to see and fight because otherwise they're going to die. And they're basically traumatized by that, too. Everything traumatizes these people. So we move along to Maggie and Aaron, who are going through a sewer under the wall past the walkers. And Maggie wants to go on her own, but Aaron implores her to let him come so that he could amend for his errors. And on the way, Maggie tells Aaron that none of this is his fault, But he says the people are dead because of him, and he has to live with that. So there's a ladder that's jammed in the way under the sewer, and they unjam the ladder, and a walker comes out from underneath, and another walker comes out after that. They nearly attack Maggie and Aaron, but Aaron winds up taking them all out in a close call. Those were really gross walkers, by the way. They were like shit walkers. They remind me of the Golgotham from Dogma. Remember that? The Golgotham, a shit demon. Remember he came out, he was like not born. Shit into existence.
And we were it's like, funny, geez. That's the last Jay and Silent Bob movie that I watched from the whole series of movies.
That is the best one. That is the best. I love Dogma. Dogma is an awesome movie.
I don't know. I liked Clerks 1 best.
Clerks 1 is also right up there. Those are the two best ones. Mallrats is still funny, not as funny. Jay and Silent Bob really felt a little phoned in for me. I didn't like Clerks 2. But really, Clerks 1 and Dogma.
Yeah, 2 was shit. I still got it in my DVD collection, but I picked it up just because I have all the other movies.
Yeah, this other one, it was less of a bromance, Clerks 1.
Yeah. But back to the shitwalkers. I was watching the scene and I was like, kudos to her for not throwing up, or for them, or like, I guess not kudos for the actors for not the actors, but the writers for not adding that in. Cause I know, like, despite all the stuff they've been through, I would have thrown up.
Yeah, they don't like to do that in this version of the show.
Mm.
I've noticed that. Like, when they put the guts on themselves to get out of the city, Glenn was supposed to throw up and he didn't.
Yeah, it was like, I can stab you in the eye, I can watch zombies get ripped in half, I can watch skin get torn off of necks of living people, I can see intestines sprawled all over the floor, but nah, throw up is a bit much.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, Aaron, in the process of moving the ladder, winds up hurting his head and it gets broken open and he's going to need stitches but refuses to return. We get treated to an extra scene of Olivia, who winds up stabilizing Scott. She somehow disinfects the wound with a needle. I don't know.
Yeah, she goes back and like reads her book a second time. And I guess the book tells her to pretty much just pull out the pus from the wound.
Yeah, and we can hear that in his pulse from the machine, he starts to stabilize. So Scott's going to make it.
She pulls it out. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Rick has a scene where he's over the wall talking with Ron, or rather he's looking over the wall. And Ron tells him that Carl wanted to try to go out there to go after Enid, but he tells him that he had a change of heart. And now he wants Rick to teach him how to shoot a gun. Then we have Olivia and Tara have a bit of a little kissing scene there where,
I don't know why my wife got so excited about that. She just started screaming and she was like, I knew it. Lesbians.
It works though. You know, when she asked her, what was that for? She said, it's for the end of the world. But no, I think you're right. It's because it's lesbians. And we don't need an explanation for lesbians. That's always good.
Yeah.
So back at the sewer, they make their way through the other side, but it's basically covered with walkers. And Maggie winds up admitting that it's a danger because she's pregnant. She says that Glenn would have shown her a sign by now if there was anything that she could have done. And that she says she doesn't know if she did the right thing or the wrong thing, but she'll have to live with that. And Aaron's going to have to too. And then they basically have an embrace in front of all of the walkers that are at the gate.
Yeah, because Aaron still tries to go forward after she says, like, just give up. And then when she screams at him, I think that's what attracts the walkers. And then she mentions that she had a picture of Glenn and she burned the picture because they made a promise to never be apart from each other again.
It's a stupid promise to make in a zombie apocalypse. You should make an effort not to ever be apart again, sure. But
right,
a promise.
You know Glenn is the main, he's the runner. Like, you can't make that promise.
Yeah. And to her credit, I think it's good that she made that noise, because what would have happened ultimately? Aaron would have gotten out. He would have made some sort of a clanking noise or something. Mm-hmm, and he would have been on the other side when they came and overwhelmed them. It was a stupid mission.
They would have smelt the fresh human blood or something. He would have been next to go.
They would have just killed his ass. Look how fast they were on that gate.
He was going to get killed in the sewer, like when the first walker was coming at him after he fell and hit his head.
I don't know. Aaron's the main character, man. He's still alive in the comic books.
Yeah, no, but I mean... Based on the show, that doesn't mean anything.
That doesn't mean shit. You're right. But, you know, I think that Aaron's like an actual character. You know, I don't think that I couldn't see them doing that. Not with him. So I think he'll be fine. So then we have Jesse and Sam, who Sam's scared to go downstairs because his mother's a fucking psycho killer. He doesn't want to get stabbed with scissors. He doesn't want to ever get a haircut again. Cookies aren't going to bring him down. That's when you know you fucked that kid up, when even cookies don't bring him down those steps.
Yeah, I mean, like, his fat, pudgy ass. He's just like, no. He's like, I'm staying up here. Everything stayed the same up here.
Cookies need love, like everything does.
You could always rely on good old Smith for a laugh, huh?
Oh, man.
But yeah, even Cookies with Love didn't bring Sam down the steps after watching that murder. So then we get Deanna, who's looking creepy as shit in the middle of the night. She scares me more than the walkers at this point. I was frightened. I couldn't sleep.
He was like, what's happening here?
Yeah, and basically this walker creeps up on her, and this is the one we talked about back in the Crazy Wolves episode where on the way out the door, Carol sprayed him with her auto rifle, and he went running off, and we never saw him again. Apparently, he right outside somewhere, he went near some bushes in the house, like under the bushes, and just died there. So now he's coming back out as a walker, and she's stabbing the shit out of him with a bottle, like warrior style, you know?
In the neck, and then in the chest.
Mm-hmm. And then Rick comes and takes the bloody Deanna off of the body while she's stabbing the guy, and she admits that she wants to live, but she says that they don't need her, they need Rick.
She's very unconvincing that she wanted to live. I mean, you do know at this point in the zombie apocalypse that you aim for the head. I don't know why she was going to town on the chest and the neck.
Not when you're hysterical and have PTSD. It's just one of those things. It's like we got to sympathize with her. It's a zombie apocalypse. But she asked Rick
if... I'm not sympathizing with anyone. I don't care how much you like them.
She asked Rick if what she wanted for Alexandria was just pie in the sky, and Rick says no. And then we get back to Maggie and Aaron at the tower, and Maggie rubs Glenn's name off of the wall, the memorial wall, indicating that she's not given up hope yet. And
I thought that was kind of fucked up that they put his name up there in the first place.
Yeah, like you guys didn't wait, right?
Yeah, you guys are supposed to be the civilized, sympathetic ones. Like, wait until the rest of the group comes back. At least give it a day or two before you just write his name on the wall.
They got his name up on that wall faster than WWE got Rollins' name off of the Survivor Series card. That's how fucking fast they were. Ridiculous. Oh, man.
It's funny because Rollins' face is like on the poster for the pay-per-view and everything.
Yeah, they already changed that, but we'll get into
that. Did they?
Yeah. So Rosita's watching the wall with Spencer, and she thanks Spencer for taking out the driver of the truck, and she tells him that he's doing the right thing, and then he starts sneaking some crackers. He's all about the crackers.
Yeah, my wife was watching that, and she was like fucking drunk, and I was like, calm down. I was like, it's a bag of crackers, and she's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, what did she think? They were alcoholic crackers?
She thought he was pulling out another bottle because like she heard the plastic, so I guess she thought he had it in a paper bag.
Nah, I mean, as a drinker, I could tell you every now and then you need something salty to soak up that alcohol.
Yeah.
So he went.
Unless you're just one of those people like you don't give a shit and you just want to be piss faced drunk all the time.
Yeah, so he went from the stolen booze to the stolen crackers. Good for him.
Yeah,
and
he's showing some attempt to sober up.
Yeah, sure. So then we'll make room for more.
Yeah.
So then we have
after he finishes his watch, he's gonna go down another bottle.
Yeah. So then we have a Rick and Jesse scene. Where he tells Jesse that he's not sure who's alive, and that's why he wanted to wait on the whole body thing, and that's why he didn't want to quit or anything. And this leads to a Rick and Jesse moment. What did you think of the Rick and Jesse moment?
It took long enough. For those of us that read the book, we know that those two eventually hook up, so it was just a matter of when it was finally going to happen. I thought it was kind of weird that they chose the opened-out garage for it to happen. I've been getting more and more into watching The Talking Dead. You know, it's not something that I normally watch. And they do mention that in the episode where it was like, what's his name? The guy that was on Chuck, he's now on Heroes. I forget his real name.
Yeah.
But he mentioned he thought that Deanna was going to walk right past them while they were making out and just like look and see them.
Or poor Ron, right? Ron's going to walk past. Like we're in the middle of a zombie.
Yeah, but
think about this for a minute. We're in the middle of a zombie apocalypse, right? Your driveway is open. There are walkers at the gate, right? And these motherfuckers are like this. Like, I wanted them to have their moment, but I didn't want it to be that moment.
Yeah. And slowly caresses her leg on the tooth. Over and fall onto the clank of the chair.
Rick and Jesse having that moment, boy, with the fucking garage door open so that anybody could look. Yeah, Yeah, so that happened. Oh, boy. And then we have creepy Deanna at the wall, slapping at the gate.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's like, such a soldier.
This is the shit that's going to agitate the walkers into breaking the wall down.
And then the last shot we get is blood trickling through the wall, which I'm assuming is an indication that the walls do have vulnerabilities and that they won't hold if the zombies are already smashing themselves into mm-hmm. it and blood seeping through. So it's a foreshadow of the mega herd getting through.
Like I said, her agitating them more in that area, like that, in that weak spot, they're going to break through.
Yeah.
It's going to be a moment where finally everybody's going to come back and they're going to break through. And it's like that happy moment. It's going to turn into, oh shit, we got to deal with the super herd.
Mm-hmm. And again, if you guys want us to discuss the comic book arc of the super herd and what happens in the comic book version as a spoiler, a second serving or something, just send in some comments. If I hear enough of you wanting to hear about this, we can do like a 15-minute second serving and throw it on YouTube, or we'll just talk about what to expect and what's going to happen with that. Not going to do it on the main show, though.
Yeah. I do need to get the last set of books because this is where I'm up to in the books. It's after the super herd and they meet Jesus and everything.
Yeah, so we have a lot of cool things coming down the pipe. And before we start the show, anything else going on?
I mean, you know, I started watching Supergirl. It's two episodes in. I've only watched the first episode. I've continued watching Ash versus Evil Dead. Still haven't caught up with Heroes. I'm a couple of episodes behind on Arrow. But everything else is pretty much as is.
I'm up to date on Supergirl. I watched both episodes. It's a little campy. The acting is a little campy, but I expect that from early episodes on the pilot. But it's still something that I'm enjoying. I'm enjoying the campiness of it, and I'm enjoying the fighting and just things about it. It's perfect.
It's a CBS show, so it's expected.
Yeah, and it's not perfect, but a lot of these shows start off a little bit weak like that, and then they get better. I see potential in it, so I'll keep watching it. I do like the way that she's designed and everything that's going on. The characters are done very well. I'm glad she's not the only person.
You like Jimmy Olsen also?
Jimmy Olsen's definitely unique. He's changed, man. He's totally
changed.
Went on
that vacation to Tahiti, came back with quite the tan.
Yeah, he's incredible, man. He hit the gym.
yeah. What bugs me with that, and it's funny because remember we all watched the Superman cartoon back in the day in the like 90s, 2000, early 2000. Remember they introduced that Kara was Clark Kent's cousin. Jimmy eventually finds out that Kara and Supergirl are the same person, and he never puts two and two together and figure out, hey, Kara is Clark's cousin, but she's also Supergirl. Doesn't that make Clark Kent Superman?
Yeah, I guess they weren't very bright. I mean, come on. The man wears glasses as his disguise, and no one figured out that he's Superman. They shouldn't need all of these different associations. They should just be able to say, hey, take off your glasses.
No, you know what? It's funny, because that's always been a question that's bothered me, and I actually looked into it, and they said, like, back in the 60s, in the 60s comic, they actually addressed that.
Well, they addressed it in Supergirl. Remember, Jimmy Olsen or someone had a conversation with her where they said that it's not because of the glasses. It's because people refuse to believe that they're in the presence of someone like that. It's almost like a self-denial thing.
Yeah, I remember the original comic book answer was his glasses have some type of kryptonite in it. Like, you know how there's the different variations of kryptonite, the one that makes him evil, the green one that takes away his powers. They said it's a different form of kryptonite that it's pretty much... It's like deceptive kryptonite.
Okay, so that's interesting.
Yeah, people standing around you, it just pretty much like they can't, it's pretty much what you said. They can't perceive that the person wearing the glasses is Superman. And then you also have the fact that other things that they've said, like Clark Kent, he slouches a little bit, and because of his clumsiness, that they would never believe that him and Superman are one and the same. So it's a combination of everything.
Hmm. Well, at least they gave us something more than glasses, right?
Yeah. Which is funny, because they did in the what everybody calls the shitty Superman movie, the one with Brandon Roth. Remember, they have the same scene where the dude that was Cyclops, that was Lois Lane's boyfriend or husband, whatever the hell he was in the movie.
Right.
When they're both sitting in the office and they're looking at Clark, and it's like, look, they're about the same height and the same build. And then they're just like, nah, like, we've worked with this guy for years. He's too clumsy. There's no way he could be Superman.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I'm having more fun with that than most of the other stuff going on this week. I found The Walking Dead a little bit weak. It didn't really progress the story too much. We'll get into Raw and everything else in a little while. Let me think. Other things.
Main event was interesting, but we'll get into that.
Yeah, we'll get into that before Raw. Remind me before we hit Raw that we'll talk about main event. Other things, I've been playing Call of Duty Black Ops 3.
Have you been enjoying that?
Really cool, man. Really cool. They really tightened everything up. It doesn't feel like Advanced Warfare. It feels like its own monster. I like the fact that the campaign is a 4-player co-op campaign, so you can play it with 3 friends. And when you beat that campaign, it unlocks campaign number 2. That's the 4 of you in a zombie apocalypse. And that runs independently from the standard zombie mode that they usually include in these games. So you get
that
the two
is actually very cool.
Yeah. So you get the 2 campaigns plus the zombie mode and a bunch of other shit. The multiplayer's done very well. It's just a well-rounded game. I know a lot of people have the stigma of Call of Duty. They treat it like the John Cena of games just because it's the most popular.
That's definitely me. I know you were trying to sell me on the game and you were telling me like all this stuff.
You liked Advanced Warfare. When you came to my house and played Advanced Warfare, you wound up buying it, man. And it's way better than that.
I've played it like once since, but it's like I told you, like first person shooters, other than Destiny, they're not really my thing. Like, believe it or not, I still haven't picked up Halo. I'm going to pick it up at some point. You had to have a Halo game on your system. I always say it's like having a Nintendo without a Mario game. So I'm going to pick it up at some point.
Yeah. And trust me, man, when you see this Call of Duty, you're going to really like it. I believe Matt from the group page also plays it. I saw him post something about it. Hang in there, Matt, because I know he said he was having a hard time. But believe me, man, it's totally worth it. Totally fun game. I'll probably stream a little so you guys can see it. I did my 14-hour stream of Halo. That's the only reason I haven't gone back to do any WWE streaming yet. I was sort of on break. I'll do some of that. I'll do some of the Halo. I'll do some of the Call of Duty. Eventually, we'll tag up Fallout and Tomb Raider.
Yeah. Like, you know me, I'm living up to the McWrestling name. The only thing I've touched in the past couple of weeks is the WWE 2K16. I literally wasted 2 weeks trying to import my face in. That face feature does not work as easily as they said it does in the video. It's a real fucking pain.
I figured it was going to be a pain.
It's a real goddamn pain. Like, to the point, it's like I got it to the point that I wanted where it works, but you can see that I had to take shapes to cover up the sides of my face. Like, the character looks kind of awkward, but I'm satisfied with it. I'll take it as it is. I just finally started my career, and my career is interesting. It's real interesting. It seems a little bit unfinished, if I can say that. I don't know who's playing as Apollo Crews in their universe, because, you know, it crosses over. So if you do actually eventually play my career, I know you haven't played it yet, my character may end up in your my career.
Really?
Yeah, they did that last year. So it was like one of my friends from Twitter, I actually have him on Xbox, Chris Spirito. He meets a lot of the WWE superstars. He showed up in my universe last year. This year, like I said, whoever's playing as Apollo Crews, they showed up in my universe. But the game seems to have glitched a bit. I don't know if it was because of the update. So when Apollo Crews comes out, he has some of my logos on his body. Like, one of the animes I watch is Foolie. So I have some of the art from Foolie placed it on. It's like plastered on one of my attires. It shows up on Apollo Crews's trunks and on his face. I don't know if that was a glitch for just the one match that I did against him. Another issue that I've seen is when Renee Young interviews you backstage, because at one point in the storyline, Tyler Breeze does attack you, and she even interviews you backstage, and she asked you, like, how do you feel about it? She has this very weird pause where I guess they were supposed to program her in to say your character's name, but I guess she must not have finished doing, or she didn't have time to do all the call names, so it's just like this awkward pause with her character every time she interviews you backstage. Other than that, I'm enjoying the whole storyline that I've gone through so far.
Yeah, you see, for me, I've been doing nothing but playing that online mode. What's it called?
2K Live?
The 2K Today or whatever. And
2K Today, yeah.
Yeah, it's really cool because it sort of has daily experience where on Mondays when you go in there, it'll be Raw matches. On Tuesdays when you go in, it'll be main event. On Wednesdays, it'll be NXT. On Thursdays, it'll be SmackDown, and so on and so forth. And you just go in there and have online matches against people. I've come across a few people who made their calls a little OP. I'm surprised that's allowed in there since it's
level 100 mode.
I don't know what their level. I didn't even look at the level. I just know that half my life was gone with like a couple of quick hits, and they were fucking gigantic ogres. You know, people who play like that, fuck you all. But yeah, I came across people who play normal, who just pick regular characters, and we've had some good matches. I find less fuckery going on in this than the other games. The system's
very well
done. Yeah,
I mean, like, I know
you've
always been against the original created characters for that same reason that people make them overpowered and whatnot. I'm one of those characters where it's like I make my original guy, and I'm realistic with it. Like, my character is in the 80s right now. He's about my height and everything. He's not doing like power bombs or whatever because he's my size. My like in real life, I can't power bomb the Big Show. So my finisher is a super kick and whatnot. And like I play fair. Like I'll do the tie up. I'll do the taunts and everything. The way this game is made now is for, again, when you fight those overpowered characters, they can't just pick you up and just keep slamming you over and over and over. The stamina drops. Then you have the reversal system. So they can't reverse everything. They're going to get tired or they're not going to be able to reverse for a while.
Yeah, and I've noticed that. I've noticed that that stamina system and the reversal meter can fuck you up. But at the same time, it can tell you, all right, I have my finisher and this guy has no reversals. He's going down.
Right. And I like that. I like that. It also changed the whole game, the gameplay completely. Like I told you, every time I get these games, for as long as I can remember, the first thing I do before I even create my character or anything is I go right into the options and I put it on legend difficulty. I find this year playing it on legend difficulty, it's not as legendary. The AI seems a little bit easier. You can actually get off your punch combos and whatnot. It just comes to like when it comes to doing pins and whatnot, they kick out way more than they would in the previous installments. Like I'm playing in my career mode. I think my third or fourth match in, I was fighting Finn Balor, or maybe it was Tyler Breeze. And that match went for about 20 minutes with us hitting finishers and just like kicking out like at a hairpin of a second. And I thought that was pretty cool.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, we're going to explore that game. We have an entire year to explore it and learn about its intricacies. And stuff. So it's going to be exciting to see what kind of things we can come up with. And we'll start getting some more footage of that up there. There's already a few things. Check the Twitch channel. I didn't really feel comfortable about importing all of that because I know there's only a small amount of our community that wants to see the gameplay. So if you want to see it, I recommend if you're on mobile, download the Twitch app. You can see all of our past broadcasts on there. If not, just do it at home on your laptop, on your consoles, on the website. But definitely check it out because there's a library of stuff up there.
Yeah, like I said, I'm going to start posting a whole lot of wrestling stuff. I got to live up to the McWrestling name. I've had the account on Twitch for a couple of months now, and I haven't really posted anything. So I'm going to start filling it up.
We got to push the Talk Brunch shit.
Yeah. Well, obviously, my character wears a Talk Brunch shirt when he comes out to the ring.
Yeah, we'll be on the Talk Brunch channel. All of us.
Yeah.
Guaranteed.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I guess on that note, it's safe to say we can start the show.
Yeah.
This is the Talk Brunch Podcast, available at TalkBrunch.com. Also on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Talk Brunch, where the heels are all baby faces. And now introducing the two guys who run the whole thing, the tag team champions of the internet, and your hosts, Rick Dara and McWrestlin.
What's up, fellow marks, and welcome to another episode of Talk Brunch. This is episode 82. You've been with here for 82 episodes. It's crazy.
Whew. Time flies when you're having fun.
Yeah, it really does. It's been the long saga of episodes here. This one might run a little slow just because not really much going on. The big news is the Seth Rollins injury and how they, in fact, decided to handle that tonight on Raw. Aside from that, we have some standard dirt sheet stuff and just going to give you an overall roundup of everything going on in the world of wrestling. So what caught your attention this week, would you say?
I was going to ask, like, you say in the world of wrestling, does that mean you watch TNA this week?
No, don't put me on the spot. I didn't watch that
okay,
shit.
Okay, thank God. Cool.
It's bad enough that Rollins hurt his leg. I don't want to bring the mood too far down.
Okay, cool. I guess the first thing we could mention is something that you actually told me to check out, which was Main Event.
Oh, yeah, Main Event. That's right. What do you think of what happened there? To explain to the listeners what it is that you heard and what happened here.
You said the previous episode he came out to the womp, 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 womp. So I was like,
Wait. No, you can't give them that. You can't give them that.
You're going to give them the actual audio?
Yeah, you know better than that. The Adam Rose music was, in fact,
with the commentators going, what is that? So anyway, fast forward to this week, I tune in, Adam Rose comes out, and it's like a further downward spiral because this time he comes out to no music at all. And he's coming out to face Fandango, and I'm watching it, and you know me, I like to play the role of the Booker Man. So in my head, I'm thinking, you know what? This could be a cool little feud that starts on this show where it's like Adam Rose is mad at the fans, because that's pretty much what he was saying as he was walking down to the ring. He's talking about how he came out to WWE and he wanted to entertain the children and look at where that got him. Like it got, it's nothing at the end of the day. He's back on Main Event. He lost his Leo Kruger character. He lost the Party Express. He didn't go into detail like that. But anyway, Fandango's just like, whatever, get in the ring. They have a match. It's a pretty decent match between the two. Like, you know, the two guys can wrestle. And coming to the end of the match, Fandango's in control and the Ninja Bunny comes down, or the Evil Bunny. For those of you that didn't see it.
I like Ninja Bunny.
You like Ninja Bunny. It's pretty much somebody in an all black suit with an evil bunny face. And they're just standing out there.
You know what? This is the best way to describe it. It looks like they took the bunny and dressed him as a burglar.
But he doesn't even have the big the happy bunny face. It looks like a evil bunny, like a Wyatt bunny.
Did they change the face of the bunny itself? I didn't notice that.
They changed the face. It's a smaller face because the bunny had like a bigger head.
I don't know. That bunny's changed a few times. I didn't get the vibe of him being evil. I just got the vibe of him being incognito. It almost reminds me of like in the anime when you have the dirty old man who's going to sneak in to steal like underwears and shit, like in Ranma one half or something. And they have like the thing tied around their nose, that perverted thing they tie around their head, like when they're going to go pee-pee.
Very, very random, not to segue away from the Adam Rose thing. Did you see that Big E tweet earlier this week?
No, what happened with that?
Big E tweeted out and he goes, what's the guy's name? Todd Grisham? He goes, doesn't Todd look like somebody that will rifle through your mother's panty drawers, sniff it, and enjoy it?
A few of these guys look bad. The whole NXT team sucks, too. And you know what else sucks? The Raw pre-show team. I'm not watching the Raw pre-show anymore. Sometimes I have it on just in the background while I'm getting ready to watch Raw, just as a reminder. But you know what, man? They're unbearable. It's, who is it? It's Corey Graves, David Otunga, and then that one old man.
Otunga's still there?
Yeah, and then the one old white guy.
I know who you're talking about. I think his name is Scott something.
Yeah, whoever the fuck that guy is.
He was previously one of the backstage interviewers, and they just kind of just...
Yeah, he was originally from ESPN, I think. I don't know, whatever. Those guys, that whole pre-show sucks, man. They need to take that fucking 30 minutes, and if they're going to keep it there, they need to do something that makes it worth tuning into, because it's garbage. You know, it's total garbage. There's no reason for that to be there like
that. In other words, watching them set up the pyro for the show would be more entertaining.
It really would be. I'd rather just have a shot of just a blank ring, like in UFC after a fight finishes early.
Right, and just because then you would still have to hear them talking over that.
I don't want to look at them, at least. Give me some ringside or something. I don't know. It just doesn't work for me.
So back to the Adam Rose thing. Like when I saw it, I just started laughing because it was the first time you saw it. And I had told you that I had saw earlier on in the week. I couldn't remember where it was that I had saw it, but it was actually Rage who had posted it. And it was a picture of Adam Rose. Because I remember I actually commented on his picture because Adam Rose looks like Rick from Walking Dead. It's right. A picture of him backstage, clean shaven and everything. And the bunny's sitting on a box in the background, just staring at Adam Rose.
Yeah, I've seen a few weird things where it's like the shadow of the silhouette of the bunny and shit like that.
Yeah, it wasn't this. It was the bunny in the same all black suit with his face like facing the camera with the creepy smile. Just looking at Adam Rose as Adam Rose. I guess he was walking to the ring, or maybe he was walking back from after a match.
Well, anyway, tell these people what happened with the Main Event Bunny thing. We gave this bastard way too much time.
Yeah. The bunny just comes out and just stands there. Fandango climbs back into the ring, which Adam Rose kicks him on the way back in, and then he hits the party foul for the victory.
Well, the bunny somehow interfered, right? The bunny distracted Fandango.
But he didn't touch him.
He did something. I don't know what he did, but
he just stood there, and Fandango was looking at it like, what the hell?
Well, and then, he went to climb back in,
and then he looked back at it like, what is that? And then when he was going back in, that's where Adam Rose got the upper hand.
Yeah, and then even Adam Rose didn't seem to know what the bunny was. Anyway, this was just something we thought we'd notate, since a lot of people don't watch Main Event. It was just weird that they have like the heel bunny now with Adam Rose. Looks like a ninja bunny. You know, fucking Usagi Yojimbo up in the house here trying to fucking save Adam Rose. I don't know what's going on anymore. You notice they don't even acknowledge it on Raw. You know why? Because they're ashamed.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're absolutely ashamed of this bullshit.
I wonder if they said, hey, Adam, like the gimmick's going down the drain. Is the thing that you have in mind?
Shame. Shame.
That's what we have in mind. Shame.
Shame.
Like, I would hope that wasn't his idea.
Shame. Shame. Shame.
First male that we've rung that bell for on this show.
Yeah.
Shame.
It's usually China.
Shame.
Or Tammy.
Shame.
But no, like, seriously, shame. Like, I don't know. I like to think of the positive things for these guys. And I was thinking it worked for Tensai when nobody was, like, buying his gimmick.
Hold on, stop right there. It worked for Tensai. There are words you're never going to hear on any podcast anywhere.
No, like, Tensai's gimmick was failing. So what did they do? They teamed him up with Brodus Clay and became the two dancing guys who were faces. So I figured
made him the
Adam Rose, who was originally entertainment with the Party Express, like, now he's all sour and everything. And then they use Fandango to bring him back. Make the two like a tag team, throw him back on Raw. Like, give him some TV time for a couple of months before you throw him back down in NXT and quietly fire them both.
This isn't head cheese. Like, one's not going to tear the other one up and maybe.
I hope you weren't making, I hope you didn't realize that I was going for the whole head cheese thing.
No head cheese. If anyone's too young to remember, look up head cheese. Like,
we love wrestling. I don't want to see anybody out of a job as much as we give some people shit.
Yeah, or even worse in TNA.
Yeah.
All right, well, we got to talk about it because it's the biggest news, and that is the Seth Rollins injury situation that's going on. You all watched Raw by now, if you're watching this, most likely, and you know what happened, but we're going to bring
it back up to speed. Even if you didn't watch Raw and you're a wrestling fan, you should have heard the news by now. I originally heard it, and I didn't believe it until they actually posted it on the WWE website.
Just to give you a rundown of the facts, Seth Rollins was injured at a live event in Dublin against Kane. He was doing a sunset flip powerbomb on Kane, and he tore his right ACL, MCL, and medial meniscus. I don't know if I got that right. I'm shitty with medical stuff, but he's...
Sounds right to me.
Yeah, he's going to be gone 6 to 9 months. And the feud with him and Reigns was supposed to carry on into TLC. Eventually, Rollins was going to drop the title to Reigns heading into Mania. Triple H tweeted about it, and he said, "That which does not kill you makes you stronger." And WWE apparently this past week has been working around the clock to rewrite all of their programming for the next couple of weeks. JR released a statement on the situation, and he said WWE champion Seth Rollins is going to be out of action likely around 9 months after blowing out his knee, including his ACL. Rollins will be stripped of the title, as I understand, and a tournament will be held to crown a new WWE world champion, which should be positioned as a huge deal within the WWE. When a bad break occurs within your pro wrestling business, it always opens the door for, at times, the most unlikely individual to step up and assume the mantle of the company. How the creative mind address this issue is going to be pivotal, including who actually are entered into the tournament, which I assume will be a single elimination format whereby the winners advance and the losers take a seat, much akin to the NFL playoffs or March Madness in the NCAA Hoops 20. That puts a sense of urgency on every match, which should, by all rights, create some excellent TV. There are so many ways that WWE can come out ahead on this unfortunate manner. Finally, the last thing I would do is to put John Cena right back in the mix. John deserves some time off, and WWE deserves to put some of their talents in line to grow to become main eventers. This entire situation is one of fate, and now it's up to WWE to reshuffle the deck and hopefully come out of it with a winning hand where more than one talent is advanced. And then JR also spoke on long title reigns versus short title reigns. And he said, "I think that the long runs as a champion are more impressive than winning and losing a title multiple times. It seems to me that it's more challenging to hold a title over a long haul than to hold it a few weeks / months at the time before winning and losing it over and over again." Following up on Rollins, he's being replaced in the UK tour by The Big Show. So that shows that they definitely have all their ducks in a row, right? When you're going to, don't worry, we have The Big Show.
Right.
That'll patch things up. So Kevin Nash tweeted and he said, "So sorry to hear about your injury. It happens to us all. You'll return better than ever. I'll be front row first night back." And Seth Rollins tweeted and he said, "It's only after we've lost everything that we are free to do anything," which obviously we know is from Fight Club, the movie / book. And then he went on to say redesign, rebuild, reclaim. And Rollins,
you think that means Rollins may come back as a face?
I kind of don't want him to, just because that's the whole thing that always happens is heels leave, they come back and they're baby faces by default, sympathy baby faces. I don't think that'll do good for him, depending on whether or not Reigns turns, which we may get into later on. But Rollins also released a statement to WWE.com where he said, "Let's see, we were in Dublin, Ireland, first night of the tour, and I was in the main event. I was setting up to do something I've done a million times, flipping over my opponent while he was standing on the second rope. I landed underneath him and picked him up for a powerbomb, and for whatever reason, I just landed on the inside of my right foot instead of flat with my feet, and my knee gave. If you've seen the video, you know it looks pretty graphic. It didn't feel as graphic, though. It just felt like my knee dislocated and then kind of popped back in. So I hustled back up and got underneath, made sure my feet were steady, and delivered the powerbomb. Then I did a self-evaluation real quick to see what was going on. I realized my knee was pretty unstable and noticed that it felt like it was flopping around. I didn't feel like I had a lot of control under it. I was able to move around enough to finish the match, hit a pedigree, and get the win. Afterwards, I just laid there and tried to figure out what was going on. Again, I wasn't in a whole bunch of pain. I just felt like my knee wasn't right. I wasn't really sure of the extent of the damage until the next morning when I got the MRI. And that being said, WWE has replaced Seth Rollins on the WrestleMania 32 poster with Dean Ambrose in his spot. And Dave Meltzer has confirmed reports that Roman Reigns was originally scheduled to capture the World Heavyweight Championship from Rollins at Survivor Series before Rollins was injured. And Stone Cold was on 105.3, and he had some stuff to say about the situation. So I'm going to run that for you guys.
I don't know who's up next, but I'll just say that, man, from where I was at when I got the pile driver, you know, we're all rolling along and we're drawing good houses. And I went down and The Rock and Triple H ascended and they took over and they just had killer years and they broke out. And they were already stars on the rise. And so now, you know, with Seth Rollins taking a step back with his injury, someone's going to step up and it'll take several people to step up. And so it's bad. It's sad that he got hurt, but it's going to create opportunities. And these guys in waiting, they've been thinking they had a shot. Now is their chance to seize that opportunity because, you know, it's sink or swim now. And they're going to get an opportunity that normally they wouldn't have had coming.
He's right about that if this is played correctly. And before we move on to any of the stories, I actually wanted to take a little time first to talk about that. Now that we've seen Raw, what's your opinion? Let's talk about replacements. I don't want to get too much into what happened on Raw, but let's talk about suitable replacements in the long term. What are your opinions? At least give me two suitable replacements for Seth Rollins in the main event scene.
Cesaro, and I don't want to say the obvious choice of Ambrose. I mean, everybody would love to see Ambrose in the title picture. If I had to pick off the top of my head, am I picking the people that's in the tournament already?
You can pick from wherever you want, however you feel this would work for you. Just two people who you would do this with. One babyface, one heel. I think that's the way we should do it. If you had to pick a heel title run or a babyface title run, who would be your two people?
Well, I guess it, Cesaro would be my face. For my heel, I don't know. I can't think of anybody else that I like as much as I like Seth Rollins as a heel right now. They don't have that many strong heels that I could say are like a believable choice to take that title.
Okay, so who's your face choice?
Cesaro,
okay. You know, as much as I like Claudio, I've liked him even in Ring of Honor. I liked him in Kings of Wrestling with Chris Hero, a.k.a. Cassius Ohno. I don't think that he could be in a main event spot yet. I don't think he's connected with the fans that much.
I think he can pull off the matches, but he still probably needs a mouthpiece.
And just that in itself is a problem with being in the main event. I don't think that you should be the champion and still need a mouthpiece unless you're Brock Lesnar.
Or Undertaker. But, I mean, Undertaker is showing that he can hold his own on the mic. I don't like his promos that much.
I like his biker promos a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
But for me...
Which bugs me, again, right, not to cut you off with the whole bracket thing, but the whole setup. Why is Sheamus in this? Like, I feel like that spot should have been given to somebody else.
I agree, but he's also the Money in the Bank guy.
Right, which is why I said he shouldn't even be in it, because he already has Money in the Bank. So it's like, if you lose your spot, you still have the Money in the Bank that you could use at any point to cash in.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, this was definitely thrown together at the last minute. I mean, keep in mind, I wouldn't want to be in their position. They have 2 weeks to book for Survivor Series. 2 weeks. Two weeks. That's terrifying. I'm not going to try to backseat book with them in this situation, because I quite frankly wouldn't even know what to do. But I will tell you what my decision would be. If we're looking at a baby face, it's going to be no secret to anyone that's listened to the show. Dean Ambrose is my top guy.
I knew you were going to say Ambrose.
Dean Ambrose.
Why I didn't want to pick Ambrose.
Yeah, I think they can take the ball and run with him. He can be like a fucking flying Brian. Like, he can be a champion. I think he could be the rebellious leather jacket wearing title champion, you know? Just that guy, the ironically rebellious fucking champion. I think that as much as people say a guy like that doesn't need a title, I think if everyone stopped and just thought about how somebody like that would look lugging around the WWE title. I don't want to say it's like Stone Cold because it would be very different from Stone Cold.
It'd be totally different. But how cool would it be? You know what? I want it too. I just, as weird as it probably sounds, I don't want it yet.
Yeah, but I think that now's the time to strike, man, while all these guys are gone. You know, there's never been a better time for him if he's going to shine. If he, whoever makes it during this absent time of the top guys is going to be able to sustain that position once they return. I think this is the time for someone like that. Again, the leather jacket wearing, rebellious, angry, bar hopping, fighting, fucking champion. We haven't had in a long time. And I think that he can do it.
We have nobody else that can pull that off.
The guy who drives the vehicles in and is just anti-authority. I think that this is it, man. I really could totally see him. The few times he stole Rollins' title and ran away with it, it looked good on him. It looks really fucking convincing that you're not going to take the strap off of that dude. You know, and that's the only, all of my opinion on how much I like him aside, just my mental projection of how he would look with a title. It's like, I think it's just uncharted territory that they should look into. That being said, if they were going to go the heel route, there's such an obvious choice that I'm kind of surprised that no one else has really emphasized this on any other podcast or shows or anything. But I mean, the obvious choice, if you were going with someone who was going to be a heel for the long term, it would be Kevin Owens. And the reason I say Kevin Owens,
already has the IC title.
It doesn't matter. We can fix that. The Ultimate Warrior had the IC title in the WWE title. You know?
We did have it when Rollins had the two titles. The US title, it's not a problem.
It's a very small problem. I mean, the bigger problem is having no champion. I think that's the bigger problem that takes precedence over everything right now. But I'm looking at a guy like Kevin Owens. He fits the exact criteria. Number one, he's a Triple H guy, just like Rollins was. We know Triple H backs this guy 100%. Number two, you and I have seen him in Ring of Honor carry that company for over a year as their world champion.
As a member of Scum, as just Kevin Steen. We know he has what it takes.
We know once you put a belt in his hands, he's going to run with that shit. He's going to carry the shit out of that belt. I watched him. He was Ring of Honor when we were watching Ring of Honor. He wasn't just the champion. Kevin Steen was fucking Ring of Honor when he was the champion. You gotta
like,
give him credit.
We're sitting here now, and like you said, we watched him as Kevin Steen, and who would have thought we would be sitting here tonight on this episode going, we're watching Kevin Owens in WWE.
Me. I thought that Seth Rollins and Kevin Owens from the beginning, I said from day one we were watching them, I said these guys are gonna make it. I literally named which people are gonna make it. So me, just to answer that question. But point being that I think that if they wanted someone who's a heel, who's gonna hold the title for a long time, where the angle continues to be about the chase against the heel for the title, Kevin Owens fits the bill. And the only reason I see it is because we watched him do it in the indies. In many a promotion, we've watched him do it, and he works. Obviously, I don't think that's the decision they're going to make, but I think that would be it. For me, if it was going to be a face, it would be Ambrose. If it was going to be a heel, it would be Kevin Owens. And
yeah, but you know they're going to put – they're pushing to pretty much probably have the same finish where – Reigns takes the title. And if they do the heel thing, they're going to do it where he has like a really intense battle. And at the end, Sheamus comes and takes it from him.
Well, here's the thing. I was going to talk about this on the Raw segment, but since we're already here, we may as well talk about it. Mm-hmm. They're calling this Survivor Series that's coming up Deadly Game 2. Now, for anyone that's unfamiliar with Deadly Games, the reason why, I believe that was Survivor Series 1999, was it? Was it 99 or 98? Remember with the music, because it's a deadly game. We have to figure out which one that is.
Could be 98.
Okay. Anyway, I'm going to take you guys on a journey back to that Survivor Series, Deadly Game, whichever one it was. In that Survivor Series, that's where the infamous line comes from, where Vince McMahon from the wheelchair tells Rock, if I have a problem with the people, I have a problem with the people's champ. And he begins to terrorize The Rock. And he puts The Rock against insurmountable odds where he has to fight several people, and there's a Survivor Series tournament, and the Survivor Series tournament is to crown a new WWE champion. And the whole way through, they're trying to screw over The Rock, only so that at the main event, which turned out to be The Rock against Mankind, who at the time Mr. McMahon was quote unquote grooming Mankind to be his surrogate son, in a sense, at that very end, they flip, and it turns out that The Rock was with the McMahons all along, and he had already sold out. And when he told when The Rock told Mr. McMahon that The Rock would rather kiss the people's ass than to ever kiss yours, he goes back and says how that was a swerve, and it turns out he was the heel all along. And then he becomes the corporate champion. And that's where the corporate champion run comes from, which leads to the chase up to WrestleMania 15 against him with Stone Cold. That being said, everyone's calling this Deadly Game 2 because of the fact that we once again have a tournament going on, similar to back during the Attitude Era when we had the tournament that crowned the corporate champion. If we're going to call this Deadly Game 2, wouldn't it be ironic if The Rock's cousin, a decade after Deadly Game 1, turns in the main event, and it turns out that the offer that he didn't take from Triple H tonight, he did already take. And this whole thing is just a swerve. And at the very end, he turns on Dean Ambrose.
I didn't even think about the Ambrose thing, but I was like, that would lead into the whole thing as Rollins coming back as a babyface also.
The finals will be him turning on Dean Ambrose would make more sense, because if this is going to be Deadly Game 2, Deadly Game 1, The Rock turned into the corporate champion. So how ironic would it be?
So you think that's the final? I didn't think about that, but that may be our main event for the pay-per-view.
Deja vu. We have a tournament for Survivor Series. We have to crown a new champion. The one guy who they have a problem with, who they're going to clearly try to make it difficult for, is now Roman Reigns. But if at the end of this tournament, it comes full cycle, and just like his cousin, he fucking turns.
Yeah, I can see Dean Ambrose versus Rollins. Not keep saying Rollins. Dean Ambrose versus Roman Reigns.
And that also leaves it open for Rollins to return as a babyface. I mean, maybe they won't go on that route. I just think it would be cool. And what made me think about it was people calling this Deadly Game too. If you recall, there was a lot of things.
That possibility.
There was a lot of things that happened in Deadly Game 1 that were hints that The Rock was always a heel. One of the matches he was supposed to have was against Boss Man. And I forget who it was that threw the nightstick over Boss Man. Rock catches it, hits Boss Man, gets a quick pin. And that's how he advances in the tournament. We find out a lot of these things were done deliberately to get him over.
Right.
But anyway, I guess like I said, just a thought since we were talking about the Rollins thing. Ultimately, the replacements, I would say no matter what direction they go, I would go with Ambrose as a face. I would go with Kevin Owens as a heel.
That's the dream of it all, but you know how it's going to go down.
We'll see. Maybe it'll
shock us. I mean, they got Alberto in. We didn't see that swerve coming. Maybe they have another swerve in line for us.
All right. Well, we covered the whole Rollins thing. We'll keep you guys updated over the weeks as it develops. I mean, really doesn't look like it's going to develop much more. If any of you have gotten your girlfriends knocked up, you're going to have children long before he's going to be back. That's just the reality of the situation here. I don't like it. You know how big of a mark I was of Seth Rollins, a.k.a. Tyler Black. But this is it. This is where the road ends for a little while, and I do wish him the best. And while we are on injuries, we have Orton, who's looking at 6 months also.
Wow.
He's probably
for the garbage
going to,
thing?
Yeah, he's probably going to miss Mania for the garbage thing. It happens, man. So in other news, Kurt Angle released a statement on why he left WWE. And he's quoted as saying, "It's tough if you're going to be his guy. And I was for 4 to 5 years. He expects a lot out of you. That's the reason I left. We're talking over 300 days a year. He wanted me to continue to go full time and I couldn't. I literally broke my neck 4 times in a 2.5 year span. And I just kept rushing back for him. If I had to pick one guy to wrestle to end my career with, it would be Daniel Bryan. I think Daniel Bryan is an amazing wrestler. And I know him and I would be able to have an incredible match similar to what Shawn Michaels and I did at WrestleMania 21. He is an extraordinary talent, especially in the ring. They don't get much better than him. He is the one I would like to get my hands on somewhere sometime. I would love that match. He is his own worst enemy in the ring. Daniel Bryan is always bumping. His high-running knee, he takes a bump. When he's flying through the ropes, he's taking a bump. But that's his style, and he's not going to change the way he wrestles. He's going to wrestle like that until the day he retires. I just hope he gets another chance to get back in the ring and finish his career the way he wants before he retires." So, well said, Kurt Angle. I hope Kurt Angle, I hope the same thing for him, though, not for nothing, because I don't think that the end of a career should be in TNA for him.
Yeah, definitely. I'm pretty, didn't I hear something that he was, once his contract is up, he wasn't going to re-sign with them?
Yeah, we spoke about that on here. He said he was going to just explore other avenues and all this other shit. I would like to see that, because if you're going to end your career, do one more match in WWE, get into the Hall of Fame, get the hell out of TNA. I'm not even trying to jab at them. If I was trying to like bully TNA at this point, I'd watch it so that I have
more material.
I was about
to say, you talk about this week's episode, last week's episode.
Yeah, I'd watch it so that I have shit to talk. It's just painful to watch. I'm not trying to troll them. So I'm staying away from the product a little bit. I will tune in every now and then, but I honestly, at this point, it's painful. I almost can't take it anymore, man. Like, I almost can't. It's not even funny. It's fucking dreadful.
Yeah, and it's funny for those of you listening that you haven't heard the past episodes, because I was a huge supporter of TNA. I've said it on previous episodes before. I used to watch this thing. I first discovered them back in 2004 when they were on Fox Sports Network, and then they went to TNN. And then they ended up on Spike from there, and now it's on Destination America. So I've been there for a long time.
Well, TNA and Spike are the same station. TNA became Spike. TNN used to be We Got Pop, and then they became Spike TV.
Yeah. And then it's bad to see how, like, wrestling, we have our wrestling booms where it's like, oh, what we're watching is great. And then you have your dry spells, or it's like, you feel like you're watching it just because you're supporting it because you love wrestling. And TNA, it's gotten to that point where it's like, I can't support you guys anymore. And it's not just because there's other alternatives out there. Like, we've always known about the Ring of Honors and the PWGs and all the other promotions that we watch, but it's just that the programming has just become totally unwatchable.
Yeah, it's really become a pain. And what bothers me most is that when I talk about it, I'm able to come on here and dissect an episode and say all of the things I didn't like about it. But the people that defend it are never able to dissect that same episode and say all of the things that they did. I want to hear.
Right.
And we're not
saying that the matches are terrible. It's just like some of the booking makes no sense. The storylines are just, ugh.
And sometimes the matches can be terrible.
Sometimes, but we're not saying, like, we're not bashing it every week because the matches are terrible. Like, we know these guys are going out there and they're busting their ass, some better than others.
Aside from the Wolves, though, no one's really left that we would watch that for. You know what I mean? Like, what are we going to watch? Grotto? Right. Grotto versus Rockstar Spud? I thought Rockstar Spud was okay, but I'm not going to watch a wrestling show because of him. Bobby Roode's still there. Most of the people that we watch TNA for, AJ Styles and James Storm and...
They're gone.
Samoa Joe.
And even Joe's last run was very lackluster in that company. Like, he joined up with the Beatdown Clan and he was just gone.
Yeah, the Young Bucks.
Bucks have been gone for a long, long time.
And back when they were Generation Me. Jay Lethal, you know, all these people that we were watching, Christopher Daniels, Kazarian, they're all fucking gone. They're all totally gone. I almost don't have incentive to try to say, I used to at least defend it and say, well, there are a lot of people there that I like, but they really aren't. Team 3D is back to being the Dudleys. They are gone. Mm-hmm. Every single incentive reason why I had to tune in is gone. Sure, there are still people there that we know, but we can say that about Evolve. We can say that about Dragon Gate. We can say that about AAA. We can say that about New Japan Pro Wrestling, PWG, AIW. You know what I mean? The list goes on and on. There are people that we know everywhere, and you know what? A lot of them are more prestigious than the shit that we get in TNA right now.
Look at all those companies we just dropped, so you don't think we're just WWE fanboys. We watch everything.
Yeah, that shit sucks, man. I'm sorry. You know, they have a whack roster. I don't give a fuck. They have a shitty whack roster. When I look at it, it's nothing. The only people on there are Davey Richards and Eddie Edwards. I feel sorry for them that they somehow got trapped in this vortex of a fucking contract in the middle of all of this shit going on, because those guys were white hot in Ring of Honor.
I can't watch them anymore.
Yeah, it's almost like they got that TNA on them now, you know? I know, man. I know how it is. Believe me, because I used to be big Wolves marks. I wanted them when they came out as, what were their names again? Something Billington. When they were in NXT. They had those shit names, and they had the match against the Ascension. Like, I was really hoping they would get picked up there. It's just that they're so small. But looking at them here, it's like, this is just a nightmare.
It has nothing to do with being small, because, I mean, look, we have Kalisto on the main roster.
And he's doing fantastic. He's kicking people's asses. Those Lucha Dragons are really kicking people's asses. But we're not getting the same thing over here. It's really unfortunate. It's just one of those things where it's like, it reminds me, and I've said it on here before, it reminds me of WCW when it was at its worst. And in the middle of that nightmare, you would get a good Lucha match. You would get Psicosis and Juventud, you know, with La Parca and all these other guys. And you got like a really cool match with Ultimo Dragon and everyone jumping around and shit. And it took your mind off of it. And then like a minute later, the NWO music hit and fucking Scott Norton came out with Virgil. wearing NWO shirts, you know, and it was like, yeah, we're back here again. That's sort of how I feel when I watch TNA. Well, sure, obviously, I know that the Wolves wrestle great. I was watching them before they were in TNA. And I know a lot of the other guys there from where they are, but it doesn't change the fact that they're in a shitty environment. To use an anime example for anybody out there who likes anime, I like Dragon Ball. I love Dragon Ball Z. Anyone who watches the show knows that. We love Goku. We love Vegeta. We love all of them.
It's in the intro when you hear him powering up. And yeah.
We powered up and Jason didn't know what a Super Saiyan was.
He was like, what was that?
Yeah. But you know, that being said, I really like that. But when you go and look at Dragon Ball GT, which is not canon and it's not by the actual creator, even though they're the characters you love, they just suck because they're put in such shitty situations that you almost can't believe that those are the characters that you've been watching for these years. It's written poorly.
And I've said to this day, I have not watched GT to the end.
You know, now we have the new series, Dragon Ball Super, and it's canon again. That's sort of what it's like when people leave TNA. It's like they go back to being canon, because as far as I'm concerned, and I don't mean this in a mean way, TNA is not canon. And the reason why I say this is because nobody acknowledges them. We can't say the same for Ring of Honor. Ring of Honor's canon. If this was a story, Ring of Honor's canon, because when WWE people go there, they specifically will say that they are from Ring of Honor. On WWE.com, they will show their credentials. On videos on the network, it'll show that they used to be in Ring of Honor. CM Punk has referenced Ring of Honor in New Japan. No one has ever referenced TNA. No one ever
even the Dudleys,
TNA.
When they came back and they had an interview with them, don't quote me on it, but I believe they completely left out the fact that they were in TNA.
People act like they were dead before they came back to WWE. If you ever know, no one ever says that they were at TNA. No one ever acknowledges their past gimmicks.
They did
gimmicks.
It with Sting, too. And it was like after WCW left, Sting just kind of disappeared off the face of the earth.
The closest we got was when Stephanie said that he was a big fish in a small pond before he got here. And that one time that drunken Ric Flair during the WWE 2K14 press conference mentioned TNA, and he outright said TNA.
Right.
But, you know, ultimately, it's not canon. No one who ever goes there, when they leave, they're acknowledges. And I don't just mean people would say, well, WWE's in their own little bubble, and they don't acknowledge anything else. I disagree. They do acknowledge other things. They're acknowledging every place that people are from at this point. They have an open partnership with Evolve that they're working on. They're not people who don't acknowledge. And if we were only going to go by WWE, that would be one thing. But what's the excuse for people who are winding up in other places? AJ Styles doesn't act like he was ever, like the character he was in TNA ever existed when he's in New Japan. Christopher Daniels and Kazarian.
TNA tried to call him back to be in the Hall of Fame, and he turned that shit down.
Christopher Daniels and Kazarian are in Ring of Honor. They don't act like TNA ever happened. Jay Lethal doesn't act like it. The Young Bucks don't. Everyone who's gone to their respective federations, no one acts like TNA is canon. So that brings me to the whole metaphor of one hand clapping in the woods. If no one's around to hear it, did it really happen? As far as I'm concerned, TNA doesn't really exist in accordance with the wrestlers and the fact that no one who's left has ever acknowledged it. Kenny King went right back to being regular all-night express Kenny King.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he didn't say, you know, well, I used to be this shit character, the King of Midnight or whatever his name was. You know, he just doesn't acknowledge it.
The King of Midnight, a.k.a. the last remainder of the Beatdown Clan, the last member left on the roster.
TNA is not canon. And I'm not saying that to be mean. I don't think that people like to acknowledge its existence. So there
Can't
you go.
Blame them.
There's your TNA segment for this week. And like I said, I'm not trying to bully them. Oh boy.
Got a mouthful of something to say? Let the guys know. Be sure to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and subscribe to us on YouTube. TalkBrunch.com. Served hot.
In other news, Samoa Joe tweeted and said, "The road begins here, hashtag WrestleMania." And then CM Punk tweeted back and said, "Make sure to point at the sign." They really like
they
that.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, sarcastic bastard. And they're doing a CM Punk documentary. Fox is actually doing one where it's going to focus on his training for the UFC fight. And they're working. Fox is also working on a pro wrestling drama called The Work. And the series is being written by Scott O'Connor. So that's
why does that name sound familiar to me?
I don't know. He probably made something.
I mean, he made something for his credentials to be out there for him to be doing this. But I feel like I've heard his name earlier on this week.
Maybe. Who knows?
Yeah.
Anyway, CM Punk, while we're talking about him, CM Punk and Alundra Blaze, a.k.a. Medusa, were both at Paul Heyman's daughter's bar mitzvah over the weekend. Just to give you guys an idea of how tight Heyman really is with these people in his personal life, they're at his daughter's bar mitzvah.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like Medusa said, like she's always had a close relationship with Paul Heyman.
Yeah. So while CM Punk is getting his Fox documentary, Ric Flair commented on the ESPN 30-minute special he's getting. And he said, well, it's my whole life. It is a little bit to do with my airplane crash, of course, and then coming back from that, and then the titles and the championships, and it touches a lot of my personal life, which has been up and down. Right now, it's perfect, but I have had a couple of rough years there. And it talks about my son, Reed. ESPN wanted me to talk about him, how special he was to me. And then a lot about Ashley, Charlotte, who is the champion in WWE, the Divas division, and how my other two children, Megan and David, are.
I was about to say no love for David.
Yeah. So it was very nice. And then I talked about where I am today. And he said the WWE is very, very protective of their intellectual property. The project is mutually beneficial for all of us, but it just took a while to get everybody on the same page to work on it diligently. I guess it's been a year and a half, and all of a sudden it's coming to fruition. We shot the first 6 hours, and we'll shoot another 6 or 7 hours, which Woo Nation co-host Conrad Thompson will be a part of at WWE Survivor Series, and then there will be another 6-hour shoot, and then, of course, all the stuff ESPN will pull from the library in Stanford, Connecticut, with the WWE to put together the whole film. So it'll be exciting. We can expect to see ESPN breaking more WWE stories in the future, with WWE crediting them, just like they did with Seth Rollins' injury this past week. So get ready for ESPN to try to get in on that gravy train. Choo-choo!
I can't wait to check it out. It seems like it's going to be a very interesting little documentary to watch.
Yeah, it's also being reported that they're going to provide in-depth coverage for WrestleMania 32.
So it's a bonus.
Mm-hmm. And Andre the Giant will be getting a documentary. Bill Simmons is going to be releasing an HBO documentary on Andre the Giant. So we got Fox, ESPN, and HBO all releasing documentaries on different wrestlers. So it seems like we are somewhat getting some type of a boom period.
That wrestling boom period is slowly coming back, yeah.
Yeah. There's new Legends contracts as well. Superstar Billy Graham just signed a new WWE Legends contract. We spoke about him on the show a few times, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and he released a statement saying, hello, Facebook fans around the world. I'm thrilled to report to all of you that Triple H, via a telephone conversation, has offered to give me an official WWE Legends contract. I, of course, said yes, and thank you very much. I've received the contract and signed and mailed it to WWE, so I'm officially back in the WWE family, proving that miracles still happen. I did go to SmackDown show held here in Phoenix on October 27th, as some had reported on the internet. I met with the WWE talent relations executive, Mark Carano, which you guys know from Total Divas, the little guy who always brings bad news, to go over various opportunities for me in the future.
I'm sorry. I tried to hold the laugh in.
The little guy who always brings bad news got you, right? Come on. You know that that's what he
does. That is what he does. Like, you only see him when he's coming out to tell people, like, hey, you can't do this. Or, Paige, you know what you did.
He's coming out to tell Paige she can't have a tattoo, or telling Natty that she's going to be bumped off the card.
I think the last time we saw him, we didn't actually see him because he was like, take the camera off.
So, Billy Graham goes on to say that Mark Carano is a real class act and a gentleman, and was very encouraging in the future release of the WWE merchandise sometime after the first of the year, along with attending WrestleMania 32 in Dallas as part of the meet and greet fan access festivities. So he would like to thank Triple H and Mark Carano for making this an exciting event for him, and he's officially back in the family of the WWE where he belongs. So, all right. And then Tatanka also just signed the Legends contract, and he tweeted and he said, it's official. I've signed the WWE Legends contract, and we'll see you at Dallas, Texas. No matter what it looks like, no matter what others say, never give up on what's in your heart and soul. And then Boogeyman is number 3, who has also signed a WWE Legends contract. And he tweeted and said, guess who just signed the WWE Superstar Legends contract? Never give up. Thank you, Vince. Coming to get you.
No disrespect to the guy, but what the fuck has he done in the history of wrestling to earn that status of legend?
Nothing I enjoyed. But apparently it's being reported that WWE will be announcing more Legends deals soon.
Oh, my God.
So more people are coming back. They're doing whatever they can. They're also interested in signing Michael Elgin. because his contract was set to expire. But I'm hearing that he re-signed with Ring of Honor.
Yes, I heard the same thing, that he re-signed with Ring of Honor. So we're not getting him on NXT or on our television programming anytime soon.
Yeah, they probably held on and didn't let go.
And
because Ring of Honor is trying to hold on to their talent right now. They're not fucking around about that. They're actually not letting contracted talent work for AAA anymore. And the reason is because Ring of Honor, New Japan Pro Wrestling, and CMLL are trying to work out a three-way relationship with each other. So that sort of cuts AAA out of the mix. They don't want people to be working there.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's not enough of AAA getting the short end of the stick, Vince McMahon doesn't want Del Rio jobbing in AAA because Del Rio just beat Cena in WWE. So AAA wants Del Rio to drop the title at their last big show of the year, which is December 5th. And it doesn't look
They're supposed to be having a tournament for that.
Yeah, that's what it looks like. They're also talking about how Del Rio, TNA talked about paying him about $300,000 a year. And he would also have been able to work his Mexico and indie dates. But during the latest installment of MLW Radio, Conan addressed rumors of Del Rio's contract with WWE and his remaining dates with AAA. And Conan said that Del Rio's contract is about for $450,000 a year. And he also said that Del Rio would not go back to WWE to make less than what he was making in the indies, which does make sense. But apparently, the executive vice president of AAA, Dorian Rolden, said that Del Rio is forbidden to drop the AAA championship. So that's why the promotion is holding a tournament to crown a new champion, because Vince will not let him job.
Okay.
That's when you know you got power, when you're booking in other companies that aren't even in the same country as you. I'm booking fucking Mexico.
I get it. And it goes back to the whole thing you mentioned before with Kevin Owens being the potential heel to take the title. I completely forgot that when Owens like bursted into the scene that he did beat Cena.
Yeah, he did. But Vince McMahon basically told AAA, you got to make him look strong. So that's how we wound up in the current situation. And speaking of making people look strong, Madison Rain spoke a little bit about the current Divas Revolution that's going on. So I'm going to let you guys hear what Madison Rain has to say about it.
This I can't wait to hear.
This Knockouts division helped put TNA on the map. We essentially started the revolution that is now women's wrestling. We've been putting our blood, our sweat, our tears into this division. So when people say that there's a revolution happening right now in women's wrestling, it's been happening for nearly a decade. And it's because of the Knockouts. When you think about the Knockouts division, you think about strength. You think about women who are athletes, who are strong. What Ronda Rousey is doing for mixed martial arts in the UFC is what the Knockouts division has been doing for professional wrestling for well over 8 years.
So, what's your opinion?
I like the motivational music that they had playing in the back of the end, and I like her passion, but you got to realize that nobody's watching your shit.
Well, she said this Knockouts division helped put TNA on the map. My answer to that, I 100% agree. That Knockout division did help put TNA on the map. I felt for a long time the Knockouts were better than the WWE Divas. I mean, for God's sakes, we had Kelly as a champion.
Yeah, that's back when they had people like, why am I forgetting her name? Roxy Laveau, and she was doing like the first ever Knockouts hardcore matches. Gail Kim, who else can I give credit to that was on the roster at the time? They had a good roster of Knockouts in the past. I mean, what they have now with the Dollhouse, I wouldn't say that that's what's putting asses in seats.
Exactly. So her next statement was, we essentially started the revolution that is now women's wrestling, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to say that that's false. You did not start the revolution that is now women's wrestling because you had the resources to do so. But just like everything else that TNA had the resources to do, they went about it the wrong way and it went unrecognized. It was there. It was going on. The potential was there. I saw great matches. No one else did because like you said, McWrestling, nobody's watching your shit. It goes back to the one hand clapping in the fucking woods. We were the only people who really saw it at that time. You know, and when they said her next statement was we've put our blood, sweat, and tears into this division, I 100% agree. The people that are there like Madison Rain, Angelina Love, Velvet Sky, Tara, those people.
Yeah, Tara was another good one. I forgot about her.
The leader of the Dollhouse, what's her name? Taryn Terrell,
yeah.
You know, she had great matches. They all, Gail Kim, these people did wonderful. So I do agree with that, but unfortunately it was in TNA, no one really acknowledged it. And she said that when people say there's a revolution happening in women's wrestling, it's been happening for nearly a decade, and it's because of the knockouts. I also have to say false. That's not because of the knockouts, because it was unrecognized, and they had the opportunity to make it more than what it was, but the emphasis wasn't there, even though the matches were good. We as fans were the acknowledgement of it being good. They never showcased it that way. The commentary didn't do that great of a job of putting it over. They didn't have video packages talking about how great the knockouts were. They didn't do enough to make it a Divas Revolution. If they would have made it a Knockouts Revolution, then they could have said that, but they didn't do that with it.
And they can't, and like, I find the whole promo that she just cut there, it was just like, you guys are praising the WWE girls for what they're doing, but like, remember, we started this and blah, blah, blah. But again, like I said, you can't really take credit for it because you weren't part of that whole revolution back when TNA was doing it.
Yeah. No, I agree, man. I wholeheartedly agree about that. It just isn't what it should have been. Unfortunately, she's right. They earned it, but they didn't get it because of poor management, poor advertising. Nothing to do with them. Because, you know, for years I put the knockouts over the Divas.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
But the advertising wasn't there.
They had great matches. I remember to the point that they were the first one that was doing the whole, we're going to have the knockouts in the main event. Like, we were watching knockouts in main events before we had NXT, and we had matches like Bayley versus Sasha.
Yeah, and it worked. It worked.
Mm-hmm. Everybody walked away happy at the end of the night. No complaints.
Mm-hmm. In other news, Daniel Bryan's big announcement, the one that he teased over Twitter last week, was that WWE would be returning to India for two live events in January. Can you fucking believe that?
Who in their right mind would do that?
When I first heard that story, I had to check to make sure I wasn't on Kayfabe News, which for anyone that doesn't know is like the Onion News of fucking wrestling dirt sheets. Because it was like, seriously, the big announcement he built up turned out to be a tour of India. Why is this happening?
You know why it's happening.
I really don't. I don't even want to know. But apparently WWE is scheduled to run some in some Indira Gandhi Indoor Stadium in New Delhi on January 15th and 16th. And this will be the first time WWE has held an event in that country in 13 years. And John Cena and Big Show are scheduled to headline those events. I don't know what it is with these Indian announcements, though, man. But in
totally doing it as a jab at TNA.
And then I guess. And then in a recent interview, Daniel Bryan said, I think the frustrating part for me with the injuries is feeling like I've almost let the fans down because they're the ones who push me to the super high level. I'm just going to intervene here and say, no, you're letting the fans down when you're building up a big announcement and instead a fucking tour of India is happening and you're not TNA. That's the first time I felt let down. I honestly thought the announcement would have been something like him returning. I'm stupid to feel that way. As much as we run these dirt sheets and report shit, it's never something that good. But I just didn't think it would be a tour of India.
No, like I said, that's definitely a jab at TNA. That's them saying, hey, TNA,
I don't
this
think
is how
they
you handle
to.
Your announcements for India.
I just think this is one of those ironic life things that happened that no one really thought about. They couldn't be that maniacal. But anyway, he says, they were the ones who, without them, I would have never gotten here. They were the ones who wanted it so bad, so it's almost like I feel like I let them down. And then he talked about people who call wrestling fake, and he said, you know how in art there's this term, postmodernism, and it's basically art for entertainment? I think we've become a little like that. I mean, everyone starts to knowingly say it's fake, and then the word entertainment comes into our name, and I think that the audience doesn't react the same way. You see something amazing, and you go, yeah. That's just a part of the script. But of course, it's also real. It's really difficult and you can get badly injured. That's why we've got to keep telling people, don't try this at home, because it is entertainment, but it's also real. It's difficult and it's painful. I'll say this, like, they're definitely keeping him busy.
Yeah, it's not like they just put him on the back burner like, hey, we're going to wait till this guy's contract expires and then like, that's it. We're cutting ties with him. They still have faith in him, be it that he's going to come back as a wrestler or a commentator or whatever it is. Yeah. They don't want to let him go.
They're definitely letting him do other things. If you watch, I don't know if you watched the show on the network This Week in WWE. They post it every Saturday. Check it out on the network, guys, if you're not watching it. But it's a show that basically within 30 minutes, it tells you everything going on in WWE. I thought it was going to be like Livewire, but they really do go into a little bit more detail as far as stuff that's going on like things that they may not have shown. Like we get to see Daniel Bryan on tour. They covered his trip to Dubai, him hanging out with the fans, going to like some museum of optical illusions and being on various talk shows, attending video game conventions, signing, doing his book signings. So WWE is not giving up on this guy. They're wisely protecting him. You know, that this is clearly all signs. The fact that he's still even being acknowledged, they're wisely protecting him. And he actually did an interview recently where he talked about his dream of running as the United States president. And we have the audio of that. I can't wait to hear him, Donald Trump himself here, right? Like, what the hell? Where is this leading?
Hi, guys. Welcome on the Quinn. I've got with me WWE superstar. And who is he?
WWE superstar Daniel Bryan, the guy who does this.
So we've seen your fans say that Daniel Bryan for president.
Oh, yeah. I'm not old enough to run for United States president yet. So okay. I'm working on building up my resume, you know, as a WWE superstar. And then going and running for the presidency, maybe 2020. So I feel like the United States would be better ran if I were president.
Anyway. I'm pretty sure your fans would want to know, who's your biggest nemesis?
My biggest nemesis is probably the Ryback.
Ryback.
Yeah.
The next time you see him in the ring, it's going to be like...
Yeah.
How's your India experience been so far?
It's been great, actually. So one of the things, I'm a big foodie. I love food, and I like vegetarian food especially.
Wow.
And so, yeah, India has literally the best vegetarian food.
What are you saying? You haven't tried any of those butter chickens and chicken tikkas?
Yeah, no. I mean, I prefer the vegetarian stuff. And so
what have you had so far?
So I don't know what it was. It was like, so for breakfast this morning, I had this like, it was almost like a tortilla, but it wasn't a tortilla. Uh-huh. It was filled with like this spicy potatoes, and then you put some sort of sauce on it. It was just unbelievable.
So should I tell you what it was?
Yes.
It was aloo ka paratha.
Okay.
How do you say that? Say it for the fact.
Aloo ka paratha.
Aloo ka paratha. So that's your favorite dish.
Aloo ka paratha. I don't know if it's my favorite. You know what? I love all the different curries too. Indian curry is amazing.
So WWE Live is coming to India on January 15th and 16th. And incidentally, 16th is my birthday.
Oh, wow.
So am I getting a free ticket?
So you will not get a free ticket from me, per se. But there are other people that you could ask for free tickets, and they may or may not give you one.
But just do one Bhangra step, yes, for our fans.
Okay. Yes! Yes! Yes!
All right. Thank you. Thank you for joining us on the Quid Selfie interview. Was this your first selfie interview?
First selfie interview, yeah.
How was the experience like?
Yeah, I mean, it's cool because I can look at you, and then I can look at myself, and I can see how crazy I look in this interview. So, yeah, it's great.
Hey everybody, WWE superstar Daniel Bryan here, and I'm telling you to feel the quint. Yes! Yes! Yes!
So yeah, that video is just another example of the fact that they are giving Daniel Bryan stuff, and it is stuff that's working out. So they haven't forgotten about him, they're just being very careful about him and his injuries. Speaking of injuries, Rey Mysterio... No, he's not injured or anything. I just speak of injuries. You think of Rey Mysterio. He almost, he talks about the time that Bischoff almost sued him. And he was on MLW radio and he said that, he told Eric Bischoff that he did not want to lose his mask back at Halloween Havoc in 1997. And Bischoff then threatened Mysterio with like a breach of contract lawsuit. He says, I remember getting in there a day or two early before the pay-per-view. And we saw Eric Bischoff at the Betty Boop Bar at the MGM Grand Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada, which is right there at the entrance. And I remember I wanted to talk to him, and it was very brief, but I told him that I wasn't comfortable doing that match, especially where I wasn't comfortable losing my mask. And he was like, Ray, you have to do what you're told because you're under contract or else you'll be in breach of contract. So he was really getting me at me that day. That whole week was a nightmare, man. Mysterio also talked about when Bischoff heard that he was thinking about no-showing the event. He says he called my house and I picked up, and I guess he heard that I wasn't going to show up, and he said, Ray, you'd better show up. And again, he mentioned the same thing, or else you'll be in breach of contract and it's going to get really ugly. So I did show up on the night at the bar, and the next day, of course, showtime, we set up the match and we were good to go. Eddie did tell me, if you don't want to do this, we don't have to. So he was backing me up 100%, and I said, nah, let's just go with it. Let's just do it. I want to say a match before ours, the decision was changed, and again, they were just messing with me. So
the whole thing was like a fucking rib?
I don't know. I mean, he did lose his mask in WCW. How much of a rib could it be?
Yeah, but I mean, that was a couple of years later to Kevin Nash, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
I think the whole thing, the last feud that he had with Jericho was trying to take his mask, and Jericho lost that. And then Nash eventually takes it in a match a couple of months after.
Yeah, and he wears it on the top of his big head. I remember that. I remember those days.
While we're on the subject, Rey Mysterio, did you hear about the his whole promotion for the 5-Star Wrestling video game?
No, I don't even know what the 5-Star Wrestling video game is, actually.
Pretty much, I mentioned this like a while back before we were actually even doing the podcast, back on the 360 days. They dropped this game called 5-Star Wrestling that was supposed to be an independent thing on the PS3. DDP was actually doing the promotion for it, and it was the alternative to WWE. Everybody that said they were tied to the WWE product. This game was supposed to introduce like a new reversal system where they had like a fake Randy Orton, and in a lot of the videos that they were showing, it was pretty much promoting that you could do reversals out of anywhere and like hit RKOs. Like if you're getting choke slammed, if you're like getting rock bottomed, you could reverse any move at any point into a finisher or just a regular move. It was supposed to be like this new innovative thing. It failed horribly. The final product looked like shit, like worse than the TNA Impact game.
Okay.
Yeah, anyway, they're supposed to be releasing a new version of the game called 5-Star Wrestling Regenesis. And Rey Mysterio seems to be the poster boy for the game. He's also using it to promote that he's basically AJ Styles first time. Mm.
On what system?
Oh, they're supposed to be re-releasing it for the PS4. So it's a download-only game for the PS4. Yeah, it's a download-only game for the PS4, so you won't be able to buy it in stores. I don't think they actually have the budget, the guys that are making it. It's a company called Sirius Parody.
Right.
Yeah, so I don't think they have the budget to actually, like, order millions of cases and, like, do the graphics or whatnot. So it's just a straight indie download-only game.
How close to completion is this? Like, is there any gameplay we could see or anything?
As far as I know, there's no gameplay footage right now. You can go and look it up on YouTube for the previous one that they had on PS3. I'm not giving them a lot of credit because they made the game look great in the early stages. And when the final version came out, it looked like they took a huge backstep. It was like playing a, dare I say, Warzone on the PlayStation 1 is what it looked like. Like when they punch, they weren't actually making fists. It was just like the straight hand, like throwing jabs. They have, like I was saying, they don't have the license for the WWE guys. So they have like a fake John Cena in the game, a fake Brock Lesnar, a fake Jeff Hardy and whatnot.
Huh, crazy.
Yeah. But anyway, I guess like Rey Mysterio promoting this is like they're doing some type of collaboration, and he's supposed to be facing AJ Styles for the first time ever at some event.
Jeez.
Under the same name, like of the 5-Star company, it's supposed to be in the UK.
I don't know about Rey wrestling matches anymore, man. Crap.
Yeah, it's supposed to be like a 3-day event on January 13th in Newcastle Metro Arena, January 14th at the Sheffield Arena, and January 15th at the Liverpool Echo Arena.
Well, I guess AJ Styles will take care of him. Just don't tuck your head, Ray. Aside from that, he's known to take care of people. You'll be good with him. I guess that's how someone in Ray's condition will still be able to go. But, you know, as long as you don't tuck your head, this should be a good event. While we're talking about indies and things going on there, did you hear about this indie wrestler that stole The Rock's gimmick and he's calling himself The Rock Jr.?
Oh my god, I didn't think we were going to cover that. I had the audio for it. Do you still have the audio?
I have the audio here.
Have you heard the audio?
No, but we're going to hear it right now.
Hit that mute button when you start that video.
Finally, The Rock Jr. is coming to Great North Wrestling.
Ooh.
Not The Rock Jr., The Rock Jr.
Everyone in Jean-Marc Lalonde Arena is going to witness the jabroni beating, the pie eating, the trail blazing, eyebrow raising. Step off the brake, put your foot on the gas. Rock Jr. coming to whoop some candy ass. Rockland. Rock Jr. says this. November 27th, he hopes you're ready. He hopes you're ready to be electrified, and he hopes you're ready for Rock Jr. to come out and do exactly what he does best, and lastly, the smackdown on some candy ass. Rockland, Rock JR is going up, bring it. If you feel what Rock JR is bringing.
I got so confused from how bad that promo was. That's when you know you shot a really bad promo. It's like I was just so lost. Ooh.
Oh, man.
First of all, he's bad on the mic. Not only is a gimmick infringement, but the guy's bad on the mic. The first thing about being The Rock is that you have to be good on the mic.
You got to be charismatic. I mean, I know I wasn't the best when I did the New Day intro. I got to redo that at one point one day, but this guy was horrendous.
I give him credit for having the courage to go out there. Like, has he watched back his own video? That's like the equivocal to someone who doesn't realize their dick is small, so they take selfies of it. Like, if you're looking at these selfies, you don't have a big penis.
You have a chode. You
the
are a chode.
What the fuck is the matter with him? Like, he seriously released that after doing it? Wow. He was really bad on the mic. The problem is, it's almost like he's trying to do like a Shark Boy thing or like a Black Machismo. But the difference was that those were good.
Yeah, you know, I don't think he was trying to parry them in a funny way, though. Like Shark Boy.
He has to
like
be.
Somebody told
he has to
Shark
be
Boy.
Funny. Otherwise, he's just an asshole, which would be funny in itself. But the thing is, when you look at Shark Boy and Black Machismo, what makes it humorous is that they kind of got the mannerisms and the voice down to a point where you're like, that's pretty fucking good. It's a good imitation. Or Jason Sensation, when he came out of Shawn Michaels and he was dropping the ball, and they're like, oh, Shawn, you dropped the ball again. He really sounded like Shawn Michaels. But when you have this guy who doesn't do it well, it just comes off poorly. It almost sounds like the people that didn't make it into the house and Tough Enough, you know, when they send in their videos.
They show the video, the funny videos. Remember they had the category this year of like serious contenders and then like the joke contenders.
How could he come out? What a courageous or foolish young man to come out during an era where wrestling fans are so critical of the smallest thing and just be a bad imitation of The Rock. You know how much heat he's going to get from that? Aside from us who are making fun of him right now. You know how much heat he's going to get coming out there with that tired ass promo being The Rock JR?
Not even The Rock Jr., The Rock JR.
That sucks. That really sucks. I'm like,
did
I'm out of
actually,
for words.
Was that just audio or did you have the video?
Nah, I saw the video. I saw the video.
Okay, okay.
He looks, The Miz looked more like The Rock. Remember when The Miz came out dressed as
The
Rock?
The ball cap. Yeah, yeah, with the Just Bring It shirt.
This guy just didn't look like The Rock. That hurts. That really fucking hurts that even exists. What an abomination. No wonder this got so much recognition.
His video that he used for Tough Enough.
Yeah, I believe he's not even good enough for Tough Enough with that kind of a promo.
He's like, well, it didn't work for Tough Enough. It'll work for these guys. Guarantee it.
Nah, man. Gilbert did a more convincing Goldberg than he's doing a Rock.
That's bad, but so accurate.
Yeah, like, nah, there's no hope for him. That's kind of mean, right? But I don't give a fuck. Like, don't come out there as The Rock and when you're a rookie. Jeez. Anyway, let's move away from that horrible story and that shitty promo.
I was going to add that Curtis Axel was a better Hulk Hogan than that guy was The Rock, JR.
That's awesome because Curtis Axel tweeted recently, he got angry and he wrote, I'm the son of Mr. Perfect for Christ's sake and I'm damn good. The sidelines ain't no place for a starter. Nothing to say to that, huh?
No, I was about to say, what other fool used to go off on a rant like that? And I just remembered it was Alex Riley.
Are you trying to say maybe you shouldn't post shit on Twitter?
Don't post stupid shit like that on Twitter, because then you're going to end up on Main Event, and then you're going to end up in TNA. Just stop.
And then before you know it, Kevin Owens is going to be stomping your unconscious body on the way to his opponent.
Like, that'll be the last straw. Like, they'll put him on an episode of NXT where he comes out. They'll have him cut a promo where he's saying the same shit, where he's like, I'm the son of Mr. Perfect. I don't deserve to be on NXT.
And then suddenly you hear,
and Owens will come out. And beat your shit, and then the next time we'll see you, you'll be on TNA. Well, we won't even see you because they won't have a TV deal. But you
and then
the
thing is, WWE is very honest about it too. So while he's taking that NXT ass whipping from Owens, the commentary will be talking about how he's had things to say on Twitter about his career.
He's been very vocal the last couple of days, and I understand the guy's frustrated, so he's just coming out here to voice his frustrations, and then, and then that's the end of it.
Yeah. Apparently, voting his frustrations has an, oh, pop-up powerbomb! And that'll pretty much be it, you know? That's how they do.
Yep.
All right. Well, in other news, Finn Balor spoke. We spoke last week about this, actually, where Sheamus and Conor McGregor don't get along and they're angry at each other. Yeah. So Finn Balor had an opinion on this entire thing going on. So I'm just going to let you guys hear that.
I have to finish with you, with Sheamus. Yep. And another mouthy showman, Conor McGregor.
Yeah.
How do you think that guy would fare in the kind of wrestling game? And if they were to square off, who's your money on? I feel like you have the insider knowledge on
That's a good question. Sheamus or Conor? Both obviously have their strengths, both have their weaknesses. It depends on what setting you put them in, really, because I think if you put them in a WWE ring, maybe Sheamus. If you put them in a UFC octagon, maybe Conor. So it just really depends on the situation.
So I'm putting you on the spot now. You have to pick one. Who are you picking?
Well, there won't be much left of Sheamus after I'm done with him. All right. So Conor all the way.
All right, so you're going to soften him up for Conor to finish him off.
I guess my money's on Conor also, even though Sheamus is a big guy.
Yeah, we've had this discussion in the last episode, too, where Sheamus got his ass kicked by Yoshitatsu.
Mm-hmm.
Very PC answer. I wouldn't say PC answer. I was expecting more of a PC answer from Balor, just to be like on the safe side and be like, oh, yeah, Sheamus is definitely whoop his ass. But I commend him for saying he thinks Conor will whoop his ass.
Indeed.
Want to chat with the guys? Then be sure to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and subscribe to us on YouTube. TalkBrunch.com.
All right. Well, before we get into NXT and Raw, I was just going to discuss some things coming up for Talk Brunch. We have UFC 193, Ronda Rousey versus Holly Holm is coming up this Saturday night, and we will be doing a second serving YouTube exclusive, as always, which for anyone who's new here, those are 15-minute YouTube clips we do immediately following the event, where we just give you quick feedback on what we think about the outcome. And again, that's a YouTube exclusive. There'll be a link available on the TalkBrunch.com website. So if you're listening to this from anywhere else that's not YouTube, you may want to go to TalkBrunch.com and then hit the subscribe button for our YouTube channel, or just search us on YouTube. It's easy to find. Also, Facebook. If you like our Facebook page, we always post the links on there. If anything else significant happens at that event, we'll discuss it the following day on the regular show, though. So it'll be mainly to talk about the main event of Ronda Rousey and Holly Holm.
How many seconds it took her to whoop her ass this time.
Yeah, right. And then don't forget, we're also going to have the Survivor Series pre and post show on Rant EM. We're going to all be on there and giving our feedback on what's going on. And November 23rd, we will be doing a live Rant EM special edition of Talk Brunch. That's Monday night, November 23rd, following Raw around 11:30. We're going to do a live Rant EM special edition. That's a Monday. And it also marks the one-year anniversary of Talk Brunch as a podcast. So that's cool. It'll be the Survivor Series anniversary. It'll be the one-year anniversary of us, and we'll be doing the live special. So don't forget to tune in and listen to that. And our guest for that episode will be Mr. Rant EM himself, Double A. So that's going to be fun. First time having Double A on our show.
Don't miss that shit. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to remind you guys about this later because it's that big of a deal. You know, it's that awesome.
Yeah, I always love when we have guests on the show.
Yeah, especially this one. This is going to be one to remember. One for the history books. All right. So I wanted to talk a little bit about NXT.
Okay.
Because I credit them a lot, but you know, I'm going to complain every now and then. I'm honest about when shit isn't working out for me.
Mm-hmm. Everybody was talking about that huge Samoa Joe turn, but that's not what we're really going to get into.
We'll get into everything here, but my problem...
Yeah, we're going to mention it, but we're not praising the well, yeah, we're probably going to praise it, but...
There's cool things. To start off, we had Asuka versus Cameron. Cameron looked better. She did a modified dragon sleeper on the ground, which looked very well. She didn't overdo it. Her selling has gotten better. Her timing has gotten slightly better. That being said, I don't watch NXT to see Cameron's improvements. You know, this is something I'm investing myself into as a wrestling fan, focusing on the wrestling aspect of the business, less on the entertainment. This whole match, though, to the credit of the way it was booked, was more or less a display of Asuka's ability, her submission ability, her spinning back fists, her running kicks, her Asuka lock, all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, when Cameron ran for that slap and she just like, I don't even know if she actually hit her in the face with the slap, but then like Asuka fell back and caught her in the armbar. Like I thought that was the end of the match at first. So I was surprised to see that the match, it wasn't like an instant tap out considering it was Cameron that she was facing. And I can't complain because like you said, we got to see that Cameron actually did improve as a wrestler more so than Eva Marie, sad to say.
Absolutely. Again, Asuka looks good. They're keeping her in NXT. We're going to get into that a little bit more because everyone's saying her going up to Raw and everything. Probably not going to happen. We'll get into that at the end.
I don't want it. I'm fine with her on NXT right now.
Next on the card, we have Bull Dempsey, which was against Angelo Dawkins with Sawyer Fulton in his corner. And I just got to say, I can't stand Bull Fit. To me, it's bullshit. I don't want to see anything with this guy.
I like it.
I don't like it at all. I don't like the gimmick. I don't like the guy. He went over with that ugly ass drop that he does, which doesn't look good to me. It was almost like a bonsai drop, but just with a bullshit guy coming down on you instead of, I don't know. I didn't like it at all. And then Sawyer winds up looking frustrated and he waves off Dempsey. And he just walks off. He walks away from Angelo Dawkins. And it makes me wonder if this entire shitty segment
was... It's a story progression.
Yeah, that entire shitty segment was set up just to break the two of them up. And I don't know. I don't know what the point of that was. We had Eva Marie in a match. Do you happen to know what girl that was she was fighting? Because they really went out of their way not to fucking say her name.
Yeah, I don't know who the girl was.
Could have been someone we've seen in Shimmer or Shine. I didn't recognize her. That's happened before. But they really made it a point for us not to know who it was. Go back and watch that match, the way the commentary said everything. It was definitely made for us to not know.
And yeah, it was a pushover match. The whole thing was to get Eva Marie over and talk about how she went to Paris and how she improved when she was in Paris.
Yeah. And the thing is, she's still awkward in the ring. She has a decent enough suplex. That's about the nicest thing I could say. That guillotine headlock that she used looks fucking ugly. That big boot that she gave to the girl running at her looked really bad.
It looked very sloppy.
Her finisher, what the hell was that? Do you even know what that finisher was? What was she trying to do? Like, it didn't look like anything.
I don't know.
Like, whatever that was just looked bad. She's just bad. She's really bad. She has no business in this ring, man. Unfortunately.
Like when she hit that quote-unquote finisher, I didn't expect that to be the end of the match. Like when she picked her up, I was like, no sliced bread number two.
Yo,
I was
like, okay, I guess look she's at the not fans' doing that anymore. Faces, man. They look like they're looking at a fool, like a fool that juggles on a fucking unicycle. Like they have this look on them, like they're just looking at this asshole. And I'm not calling her an ass. I'm just saying that if you look at the fans, if you read faces, man, they're looking like, look at this asshole who's in the ring. Like, they're not taking
because
her seriously.
They probably remember who the girl, like, the same girl that we can't remember her name. They probably know who she is.
She looks really like, bad in the ring, man. That shit sucks. That sucks.
Yeah, it's like, we're watching her job to this girl.
Oh. Next, we had Apollo Crews against Finn Balor, which was a good match, but by no means made up for the NXT that they made us watch that had Bull Dempsey, Cameron.
Bull Dempsey, Cameron, and
Eva Marie.
Eva Marie match.
All in the same fucking show.
Oh, man. I tell you, man, every week in wrestling can't be golden.
No, but it shouldn't be piss colored either. So anyway, Baron Corbin,
for whatever reason, comes into
this match and interferes on Apollo Crews and Finn Balor, and then he beats him into the steps and lays him out. And then he goes after Balor afterwards and beats him up. So then Samoa Joe does a run in and clears Corbin from the ring. And the fans are already chanting, turn, Joe, turn. So, gee, wonder what's going to happen here. Joe turns and hits
Balor
and attacks him.
Cruz is still on the outside.
Yeah, exactly. And then he hits him with the muscle buster and he gets the title, comes in the ring, holds it over Balor's body. And that's it. It's the big Joe heel turn that happened,
which
there
wasn't much. Like, it wasn't a surprise to me. It's Samoa Joe. We've seen him do this in the past.
Yeah, but you see how lopsided this NXT was.
And yeah, it was very underwhelming.
And that brings me to my next point of news. WWE has no plans to bring Samoa Joe or Asuka to the main roster. Both wrestlers are in NXT to add the experience and some name value to the third brand. The idea is for them to help teach wrestlers to be groomed for the main roster. And that's why Joe was working with Baron Corbin before and why Asuka has been working with Dana Brooke. Because WWE plans to eventually promote Brooke to the main roster. Yeah, and Rob Naylor, who offered creative assistance at NXT and remains in touch with people in the organization, revealed on a recent audio show that WWE doesn't have any big plans for Joe. One issue for WWE...
I'm fine with that.
Yeah, one issue for WWE is that if they promoted everyone who is good to the main roster, NXT would quickly become a shell. They need to have established stars who will stay as cornerstones for the yellow brand. And I agree with that, man. That's the reason why that show was like that. That's the reason why we had fucking bullshit and all this other things going on. Because a lot of the people that we used to watch this for are long gone. We can't have Asuka and all these other people go up, because what the hell are we going to be left with? You're telling me that I'm going to be tuning every week to watch bullshit and Baron Corbin and Sawyer Fulton?
Dude, I swear to you, I'm going to download, I'm going to make a Bull Dempsey. And the first time I play you in a match online, I'm going to pick him. And I'm going to win the match.
Yeah, you know, it's Joe did an episode of Table for Three with Corbin.
Did he? No, yeah. I definitely got to check that out.
Yeah, and he was quoted as saying, he was like, I was kind of brought in to add the momentum that NXT has going. I mean, obviously, I think we all want to go win the big one, but I also wouldn't mind helping NXT be part of a bigger thing. It's a real unusual kind of time. To kind of be a part of this process and a very unique position for me. Kind of coming in, so I don't know, man. I'm kind of laying back and seeing what cards are dealt and playing the best hand. And I think that's fine. He gets it too. He's going to stay in NXT. And you know what? Being in NXT doesn't mean that you could never be on a pay-per-view or that you won't be on Raw. It means that the roster that you're a part of is NXT. That doesn't mean he won't come up at a Mania or at like another big event and have a match or be part of a battle royal, or he can't have an angle on the main roster. But it means that
I feel
designated...
like it's already been planned that he's going to be on the on Mania.
Maybe we'll see. But I just think that the way that it works right now, NXT is a good federation to be in, a good brand to be in, and you can also still do other things. That doesn't mean you're condemned to not ever show up. So I think it's fine. I think they're doing the right thing. That roster needs to have its own thing going on for a while without sucking people up. I think that's a really good idea.
Do what they were doing before. We had the guys like Neville show up on TV. Just have them make like sparse appearances. Have them do if you want to help promote NXT, have them show up, do a match on Raw or on SmackDown, and then have them go back to NXT.
Yeah, exactly.
It's potential that I see it. That they could work out a way that Joe can make it at WrestleMania, where they have, like, I guess, a little mini battle royal or something like that, just to get the exposure. Or, like, even at Survivor Series, where it's supposed to be the Wyatts versus Undertaker and Kane, and it's still, we don't know who their partners are going to be.
Or if they're
being speculated that Balor may be one of the guys that comes up just to help him for that one time.
Or maybe it'll just be the two of them, which wouldn't surprise me either.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the top matches that are being discussed for Mania right now are The Rock and Triple H and John Cena against The Undertaker. So those are the only things that are being rumored right now.
I don't want to see John Cena versus Undertaker.
I think it would have made more sense before the streak was broken to have John Cena versus The Undertaker. I don't know if him breaking it would have been the right thing to do, but I will say that it would have made everything in this storyline come full circle from the time that he first meets him and he's like, what's your name, kid? And he's like, John Cena. And he sort of gives him the nod of approval. And now here he is in the event to possibly break the streak. It would have
that
made more
sense. That would
have
been the exciting factor,
It would have made more sense than Lesnar and been more believable. But now, I don't know, it just doesn't have the value. I guess if they still want to do it, go ahead. They could still promote it that way, but I think the streak would have given it more meaning as well. But, you know, hindsight is 2020. And yeah, that's pretty much it as far as NXT went. I guess we're going to move on to Raw. Good old Raw, which barely kept me awake this week. I don't know, was it just me?
I mean, it wasn't a terrible, terrible Raw. It wasn't their best Raw, but there was nothing bad about it that I can say. I enjoyed it.
Nothing really did anything for me. I mean, it starts with Triple H opening the show, and he gives the acknowledgement of Rollins and how great of a champion he is. He calls down Roman Reigns. He tries to seduce Roman Reigns to the dark side. And again, they're calling this a Deadly Games 2, so it wouldn't surprise me if at the end of it, Reigns does turn. And, you know, it makes me wonder if the final match of this tournament will just be that heel turn. And I like the things that Triple H was saying, how you don't want to get criticized, then you do nothing, you say nothing, and you be nothing. And how sellout is a word that that people that didn't make it came up with to justify how other people did what they weren't able to. Really good Triple H, hot fire on the mic as always.
I like the whole promo because I was sitting there watching it and I was just thinking at myself. I was like, if I was a wrestler and like say the whole thing wasn't predetermined and all of this was real, it was like, how would I handle the situation? Would I be the baby face and be like, no, I'm going to work to make my way to the top. I don't care if you put me back at the bottom. Or would I take the shortcut and just be like, yeah, fuck it. I'll put on the suit and I'll be the new corporate sellout.
Yeah, we really don't know. But he really tried to seduce him to the dark side, man. He put the title on him and shit. He was like, look at how good that looks on you, man. Looking sharp.
He
put the robe on.
He became Emperor Palpatine for a while. I was liking it. I really liked the segment.
Yeah, and Triple H told him, you don't want to die, and on your tombstone it says, yeah, but everybody liked me. You know, and then he declines Triple H's offer, of course, and then Triple H pulls the whole, so be it, Jedi. And fucking puts him, puts him on the bottom of the tournament. You know, so it pretty much played out the way that I thought that the beginning of Raw was going to play out.
Yeah.
But you know what really bothers me is that, oh man, and this really pisses me off. Everyone's been thinking all week about how Rollins' leg is fucked up and what are they going to do and how are they going to fix this and will it still be okay? Half people saying they're screwed. The other half of the people saying it's WWE. They're going to just bring their best shit out. And just imagine yourself being a booker and you know that people have this mentality of what are you going to do next? And then you go, calm down, guys. We have a great idea. Everything's going to be okay. First match on the card, Roman Reigns versus Big Show. You know what I mean? The one
of all
match,
people that you could have sent out.
Of all fucking matches to have when we're at a point of doubt where we need reassurance that WWE is going to be okay and stuff. You fucking have a match like that didn't exactly boost my confidence of everything's going to be okay when it's the match that I've complained about the most in all of 2015. Think about how many episodes we've been on here complaining about fucking Roman Reigns versus Big Show
and
again.
The Big Show. And they so mentioned now, that too. And it was like, oh, these guys have history together.
Of
yes,
course they have history.
Putting on shitty
you
fucking
motherfuckers.
Matches.
Like, how dare you do that to us? Where it's kind of like we need reassurance that things are going to be okay for the future. And you fucking start with Roman Reigns versus Big Show again. I didn't even pay attention to this match too much, man. Honestly, like, I used this as an opportunity to talk some podcast business with AA. Like, I was just on my phone. Like, I heard the sound.
I think you were texting me at that point, too,
ring.
And we were talking about stuff that we have to go over.
Ridiculous, man. The fuck is going on? I don't mean to curse that much, but that got me. And I couldn't believe, like, I wish you could have seen my face. You always say that I wish you could have seen. I couldn't believe that the answer to the fucking dilemma we're in with the doubt that the fans have was to put Roman Reigns versus Big Show as the first match. Ooh, I feel so much better now. The WWE is in great hands. Ooh, I feel so much better about the booking direction we're taking with Rollins. Before I was worried about what we're going to do with Rollins here, but now that you started the show with the first match being Reigns versus fucking Big Show, I feel so much better. So then it ends with Superman punch and spear, very predictably, just like we thought. They just wanted to troll us with that match. I don't think that they even care anymore.
It wasn't much of a trolling. We all knew how it was going to end. Big Show wasn't getting any victory over Roman Reigns.
Yeah. Next in the card was Kevin Owens against Titus O'Neil. Owens went over with the pop-up powerbomb.
Another match where you knew exactly how it was going to end.
Exactly. You see why this world wasn't doing anything for me? Like, how am I watch? Like, this wasn't really something to watch. Next, we had Becky Lynch versus Paige. And at this point,
that
I'm
actually
just,
surprised me.
I'm oversaturated with this match, though, because they keep showing Paige taking out the other two PCB members, and I feel like I've seen that clip 30 times already. Like, we get it.
Yeah,
she hit them both with the PTO or whatever. She hit them both with the whatever it's called, the Rampage. Jesus. And then PTO'd Charlotte. It was a good match. Becky Lynch counter grabs the tights and goes over with the pin, which is what you were surprised about, right?
Yeah, you get to see Becky wears, like, skin-colored panties.
Yeah, cool. I'm totally okay with this. I approve of this message. So next, Paige assaults Becky afterwards, hitting her with the PTO on the announce table. And it's funny how the commentators are selling, like, oh, PTO on the announce table. But, like, does it really matter when it's a submission, where it's done?
It's
like,
a submission hole on the announce table,
first of all,
right?
You're elevated off of the fucking ground, so it doesn't matter. It could be PTO on a baby carriage. You know what I mean? It could be PTO on anything. It doesn't matter.
I guess... If when she let the PTO go, Becky hit her face on the monitor?
That would have made sense, but that's not even what happened. It's like she's elevated off of the ground or whatever the platform is anyway. So what difference does it make? It was just...
I don't know.
They should have emphasized more that Paige is trying to make a statement doing this and less on the fact that it's happening the way that it is. They tried to a little bit, but they really didn't. Like I said, I wasn't feeling this, man. At that point, what would have been
the difference of doing it on top of the table or just doing it in the ring? It still ended with her letting go of Becky and then just, like, getting away from Charlotte.
Yeah, and then Charlotte comes and then Paige retreats, so there's really no altercation or any payoff to this entire thing there. So we're just going to jump ahead, which is The Miz against Dolph Ziggler. Ziggler goes over with a super kick.
Another match. Another predictable match.
You know, after that, we had Del Rio's promo where he's telling... Where Zeb's telling England that Germany tells them what to do. I thought that was priceless. And then he talks about how Vladimir Putin tells them what to do. And then Zeb announces...
Like, he'll be next to tell them what to do. Yeah,
and then he announces that the tournament will continue on SmackDown because I believe Del Rio has a match there or something.
Yeah.
One of the other brackets has Del Rio in it. Then we get Naomi against Natty. And they should have talked a little bit about how this started in SmackDown. They did a little bit touch base on it, but what makes it interesting is that on SmackDown, Natalia challenged the leader of Team Bad. And when they heard about the challenge, they all reacted like they were the leader. And they all, in one way or another, gave each other this look like, huh? You? I thought it was me. And anyway,
it's Mina. You're the leader of Team Bad.
Yeah, and then the leader was supposed to come out and fight Natty on SmackDown, and the one whose music hits is Tamina. So I'm guessing that this is Tamina coming out claiming she's the leader and she's going to kick Natty's ass. And that doesn't happen. Natty rolls her up and beats her. So it sort of eliminated Tamina
fashion.
Yeah. So it sort of eliminated Tamina as the leader. I was thinking, I guess that's what they're going to do. The leader's going to be the one that beats her. So then flash forward to tonight on Raw. The same thing happens. This time it's Naomi who came out, which I'm glad Naomi was number two because I automatically knew what that meant. That's going to be the second person that she beats because the leader is going to be Sasha, number three.
Yeah.
And that's the one who's going to beat her. I'm glad that this is sort of in a unofficial way for leadership of the group because it should have always been Sasha anyway.
Naomi was the one that started the whole thing with her and Tamina, and then it was more like they brought Sasha in. But I guess when you look at it in a way, it's similar to The Shield where people always looked at Dean Ambrose as the leader, but it turned out Seth Rollins was actually the one pulling the strings.
Well, you got to look at it more like this. Naomi's the one who started this whole thing with Tamina, and it was totally going to work out with just the two of them being together like that. That was definitely going somewhere. And then Sasha Banks came and saved it from total doom. Because really, come on, Naomi and Tamina, what do you think was going to happen?
They were going to introduce the new Divas Tag Team Division.
No, they weren't going to introduce nothing.
Get the fuck out of here.
They were going to introduce them to Superstars and then the door. That's why Sasha Banks is the leader, because she saved that gimmick. I don't even think they'd still be together if they didn't do that. So anyway, Natty goes over Naomi with the roll-up, so Naomi's not the leader either. And then Sasha Banks comes in to attack her, and... Natty winds up avoiding the bank statement and then locks in the sharpshooter, but Tamina kicks Sasha free and in turn puts Natty into the bank statement. And that pretty much ends the segment of Natty taking the ass beating.
Yeah, I was kind of watching that. I was like, is somebody going to come down and save Natty? Nope.
Next is going to be the match against her with Sasha Banks, and that'll make Sasha the leader, hopefully.
Yeah.
So next we had Sheamus against Cesaro. Cesaro went over Sheamus. It was just a basic match, not going to call everything on it. Some British guy I'm supposed to give a fuck about gave Barrett this weak-ass slap that poor Barrett had to try to sell. His name's Wayne.
Cesaro had a very unique reversal in that match. That was, like, literally the only thing that caught my attention.
Oh, the way he reversed the Irish curse?
Yeah, Sheamus was probably going to go for, like, that backbreaker.
Yeah, the Irish curse.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I did see that. That was done very well. Yeah, good eyes on that one. But aside from that, like I said, some British guy we're supposed to care about came out and slapped.
Yeah, I think he's like some soccer player or something over there.
Wayne Rooney, I think his name was. I could be wrong.
I think it was Wayne Rooney. I'm assuming he has to be like a soccer player.
Yeah, big whoop. That was.
And he was there with his kids.
You think that he would have a harder slap than that? I've seen women slap better than that. Jeez.
Dude, don't talk shit on the UK people, man.
Yeah, forgive me, mates. So anyway. Dean Ambrose against Tyler Breeze. Good match, aside from some obnoxious British kid screaming at Breeze. He's like, that's what you get when you mess with Ziggler, even though it's Dean Ambrose who's out there beating him up.
You heard that too.
But he was so fucking loud, man. He was so loud, that little bastard. Being part of the WWE experience to the point where it ruins mine. Basic match, another predictable one. Ambrose goes over Breeze. We knew where that was going. Breeze just got there. They're not going to job Ambrose. You see what I mean? How this whole thing, it should have just been a recap more than anything.
This goes into something I think we were talking about earlier on in the week about how certain people getting a push up to the main roster isn't always a good thing. Because look, you already have Breeze jobbing out on televised TV. Look how long he went in NXT undefeated.
Yeah, I know. You see, it was like totally not worth it, man. Totally not worth it. But we'll see, because he still has a long time. Losing doesn't mean that much. But I just think that
what he needs to do is lose What's-Her-Face. I don't like her with him together.
I don't mind it. Well, I have to see it a little bit more before I can give it a top determination. But
it's just like how I talk shit about Dana Brooke's face. There's something about Summer Rae's face. I just don't like it.
Yeah, but Dana Brooke is the real deal. I've been watching that WWE Breaking Ground, is what it's called.
Yeah.
I watched both episodes of those. I'm going to watch tonight's episode after this. And honestly, man, when you really see Dana Brooke, she's the real deal. Whether you like her or not, personality-wise or face-wise, that girl's not to be fucked with. Like, if you look at her training regimen and stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I know her training regimen has to be the truth. It's just the whole character that they have her playing on TV right now. I find that very obnoxious. And I look at it because I feel like it's not her at all. Just let her be herself. Because, like, when she came in, it was just like, she's not the best-looking diva on the roster. But she has the potential to be like the next Beth Phoenix. And even in her attire, you see it. Like, they're grooming her to be a Beth Phoenix.
And she keeps herself on point, you know?
Yeah, I don't like the whole I'm going to be a Valley girl or whatever type of character it is that they're trying to give her. Just let her go in and be a badass.
Indeed. Indeed, they should. So we get New Day against Neville and the Usos. And I like the fact that New Day dedicated their match to the fallen Captain Seth Rollins. And they talked about unicorn magic, but they said that there's no need for the crown to do it because European magic is garbage and Harry Potter sucks and shitted on everyone. And then Neville and the Usos come out. And there was a cool match. I think a few things were kind of risky. Instead of the standard Kota Ibushi moonsault that Neville likes to do to the outside, he transitioned it into a corkscrew moonsault to the outside, which is a little bit more risque.
He's done that before. I think he's done it enough to the point where he's perfected it.
Well, generally, he goes for the Kota Ibushi moonsault.
That corkscrew one, that's like, why am I forgetting his name? Matt Sydal pulling off his shooting star press. Like, I feel like he can do it and there's no risk. Like, he's 100% confident in hitting that move and not injuring himself or anybody else.
Yeah, I agree. But speaking of injuring themselves, the Usos keep overshooting that dive. One of them's going to smash their face into the floor. They need to stop doing that. They're not meant for aerial shit. They're Samoans. You know, they need to be really fucking careful because I don't know which one it was, but the one closest to the camera overshot drastically. He almost fucking drove his face into the mat. Need to be careful with that dive. You know, so finishes. Neville was going for the red arrow when Big E slides the trombone in, which distracts the ref, averting his
direction. I like that whole distraction of the ref thing. And then you can shove him off the top.
Yeah, exactly. While the ref is messing with the trombone, he shoves Neville off the top of the turnbuckle. And then Woods goes over using the ropes on Neville for the pin. So that was a good match, very good chemistry. It was like the one thing that was exempt from this tournament that worked out because everything else was just like blah, very vanilla.
Yeah, it's not like the stuff that we were watching, it wasn't bad stuff, but it was very predictable.
Yeah, and then lastly was the Wyatt eulogy with The Undertaker and Kane, where they stole more video footage of them. So what was your opinion of the entire segment?
I mean, it was a cool little segment, but like I said, like throughout the whole episode of Raw tonight, they just kept showing stuff of Undertaker and Kane in the past. So part of me knew, or at least I had the idea in my head that they were going to show up.
I thought that it was done well. And it's in the UK, you know, they would have pissed people off if they didn't have that going on there.
If they didn't have it. Yeah, I guess. Like, I like the whole thing where, like, Wyatt, he cuts his promo and then at the end, you literally see the title. Like, that's what made me know it was coming. They angled it specifically at that way that it was really dark. I didn't realize that's where the Titan Tron was lined up at.
Yeah, but imagine in a UK show if The Undertaker and Kane music hit and all it was them like on the Titan Tron going, rest in peace, and then it ended. People be pissed off at that. They wanted to see The Undertaker and Kane, so I knew they'd show up.
Yeah.
But for anyone that missed it, what he's ultimately talking about is Undertaker and Kane get into the ring. They confront Bray Wyatt. As soon as they get there, the Wyatt lights hit, go out. When they turn back on, the rest of the Wyatt family is surrounding Undertaker and Kane in the center of the ring.
After that, they try to jump them, and Undertaker and Kane together go to town against all four of the Wyatts and start punching them and throwing them around. The last one to enter the ring is Braun Strowman, and he sort of has like a big man standoff with Undertaker and Kane. He removes his black sheep mask, and while they're distracted by him, the other two Wyatts, Luke Harper and Eric Rowan, try to come from behind, but Taker and Kane turn around and give them double choke slams, and when they turn back around, Braun Strowman double clotheslines them onto the ground. While he's pacing around the ring doing the alpha male thing, the Undertaker and Kane do the unified double sit-up. They wind up throwing Braun Strowman over the top rope, and Kane winds up giving the big boot to Bray Wyatt. And then they go to work on Braun Strowman on the outside, throwing him over the announce table like a rag doll. Then they both give each other that look like, you know, we're going to have to go whip Bray Wyatt's ass, right? And they climb back into the ring, and they both give him a double choke slam to lay him out for the finish of the show. I think it was done well. Maybe they should work on giving them some sort of like a duo music type thing again, instead of it just being Undertaker's
music. Yeah, I didn't like how it was just Undertaker's theme, and then the both of them came out like walking all slow to it.
Yeah, but maybe we'll see something at Survivor Series. It's a big event. We'll usually have custom entrances there, so.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Like, they're not going to do the whole Roland thing.
Yeah, that's like the only thing I have left. I'm looking forward to is seeing that match. Ironically, an Undertaker and Kane match, because everything else sort of fell apart in the main event scene. But let's see what they do. They still have time.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going to happen with this, but let's see what happens.
Like I said, if our main event turns out to be Dean Ambrose versus Roman Reigns, as you said, we just may get that heel turn.
Mm-hmm. Which wouldn't be the worst thing in the world.
Not at all.
And also, don't forget, in January 7th, SmackDown goes to USA, so it's not going to go on Tuesdays live. It's going to be staying on Thursdays, but maybe they're going to start lighting a fire on the SmackDown since they know they're going back on a bigger station.
Yeah, you would hope so. Like, maybe the storylines will tie in. Well, they already do tie in, but they'll put more effort into it on SmackDown.
Yeah. All right, well, I think that just about does it. Just to remind you guys again. Things coming up on Talk Brunch. We have the UFC 193 Ronda Rousey versus Holly Holm this upcoming Saturday night. I believe it's November 14th going into November 15th because it's in Australia or something. So there's the time it's going to sort of overlap. But either way, we'll be doing a second serving, which are YouTube exclusive short audio clips of us giving our feedback immediately following the match. There'll be a link available on TalkBrunch.com. There will be the link available on our Facebook page. So go like that son of a bitch because we leave a lot of information there. Just search us on YouTube also. If you're listening to this from anywhere else, you might just want to check those places out. If anything else significant happens, we'll discuss that the following day on the regular show. We have the Survivor Series pre and post show on rantemradio.com. We're going to be talking with AA and everyone else. It's like a roundtable of all the different podcasts that are on that network. Don't forget to check there for other podcasts. You know, you guys might find other things that you like. What else? We have the Live Rant EM special edition of Talk Brunch, November 23rd, Monday night, around 11:30, immediately following Raw. That's the Survivor Series anniversary special. Our guest for that episode will be, again, Mr. Rant EM himself, AA. So you don't want to miss any of this. There's a lot more stuff coming up we're going to be announcing. So just keep looking at us at all platforms and stuff. It's bound to come up. You'll definitely find things there. I didn't think this was going to be that good of an episode, and I have to say it actually did turn out to be pretty good.
We go through this like every couple of weeks, though, where it's just like, it's been a dry week or it's been a mundane week where it's going to be hard to pull it off, and we pull that shit off, man.
Yeah, you know, it seems like there's not a lot to talk about, but there always is, you know?
Yeah, yeah. You know, we're a multiple trick pony over here.
Turn chicken shit into chicken salad. You know, as a great man once said. But yeah, we'll also have Walking Dead. Hopefully they come back a little stronger next week. Also, feel free to send in some sort of information to us, guys. If you want us to talk about anything else, you know, it's your show too. Tell us what you want to talk about, what you want to hear our opinions about.
Quick Walking Dead question. Do you think it's going to turn out that Glenn's dead? Like, you think they're going to pull a... what's her face? Carol's daughter?
No. I think Glenn's alive.
All right. Yeah, I think so, too.
So we'll definitely be here to talk about that. But again, guys, don't forget, send in anything. You're not bothering us if you reach out to us and just tell us, hey, I want to hear more about this. What's your opinion on this show or this match? That's what we're here for. It's supposed to be...
Yeah, you guys that text me or you message me on Twitter, you know, like, I'll answer you as soon as I see your stuff. Like, UK fans that actually message me... I may not get to you right away, but if I when I see your messages, I get back to you. It's not a bother at all. I don't mind talking to you guys.
It's about healthy fan discussions. On that note, we're out of here.
See ya.